racism, riots, and the role of the media in revolution. Now, I had planned something completely different for our first Reformation Society meeting of this lockdown three, and it just had to change because in the last week we have seen a tsunami of news, 24/7 hyper focus on this Minnesota incident and the riots. They call them protests, but as far as I'm concerned, when there's violence, it's not a protest, it's a riot. And so we just have to deal with this. So tonight's Reformation Society meeting deals with a real journalism story, the news behind the news. Psalm 55, verse 11, destructive forces are at work in the city, threats and lies never leave its streets. How can violent, destructive riots be misconstrued and misrepresented as protest? What is a protest about taking a hammer and smashing equipment in stores? How is this going to help anything? Well, you know who's going to pay for that? The customers. The price tag just goes up. For all the shoplifting, all the vandalism, all the looting, it just gets added to the price tag. And, of course, increased insurance premiums and everything else, and increased taxes. So we all get to pay for this violent, lawless behavior. One of my favorite news headlines, protesters hurl rocks and Molotov cocktails at police in Philadelphia. Now, protests, by definition, are peaceful. I've led well over 100 protests. We've never thrown anything at anyone. We've handed out tracts. We haven't broken anything. We haven't attacked anyone. We haven't damaged anything. I've marched 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 people to Parliament different times. We didn't damage a thing. We didn't even leave litter. I mean, I know what protests are. We do protests, and protests are peaceful. A riot is when there's violence. And petrol bombs are weapons of war. Violence and protests are mutually exclusive. Rioters throwing rocks and Molotov cocktails should not by any stretch of the imagination be misconstrued as protesters. What a slander and insult to those of us who are protesters, whether pro-life protesters or against seal clubbing or for saving the whales or against dolphins being hunted in Japan's waters or whatever the protest may be for, against pornography, against human trafficking, protesters are peaceful. A Molotov cocktail hardly spells coexist. Now, fuel bombs are weapons of war, not placards. Molotov cocktails are also known as petrol bombs, gasoline bombs if you're American, fire bombs, or a poor man's grenade. They were first designed and named by Finnish defenders fighting the Soviet Red Army invasion in 1939 to 1940, Winter War. And most people aren't aware that there was a great Winter War when Finland fought for their lives against the Soviet Army. Finland was attacked all the way from Murmansk down to Leningrad. The Soviet Army attacked. Of course, Finland's a very small country with very small population, and Russia's a huge, colossal, massive country with no shortage of manpower supplies. And so it was a David against Goliath operation. And the Soviets poured over with their massive tanks and a huge amount of weaponry. But they were facing a volunteer army of a nation of sharpshooters on skis. And Finland also leads the world in having the largest percentage of saunas, percentage of population. I think they've got one sauna for every 2.1 people. And they said that the Finns would be in their saunas, in their bunkers in the trenches at the Mannerheim line and so on, and they'd come out all invigorated and warm and so on and attack the Russians, who were frozen with their brains totally frozen and fogged over, and they would take out the first and the last vehicle in a convoy and ski around until they destroyed everything. And they really caused havoc amongst the Red Army, this little nation. Now, the term Molotov cocktail was a pejorative term, referencing the Soviet foreign minister, Vyacheslav Molotov, who you can see right literally on the side of old Stalin, the worst mass-murdering dictator of all time. And, of course, he's a good friend of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And here you can see Molotov standing right behind Joseph Stalin with Truman and Attlee. This is at the Potsdam Conference 1945. So Molotov was a major player in the Soviet Union. And as you can see, America did a lot to help the Soviets to take one-third of the world's population under their wing in this war for freedom, justice, democracy, Christian civilization, everything else, the advanced atheism and persecution church more than at any other time in history. So the Finns named their napalm-like mixture of petrol alcohol with some motor oil added, ignited by cloth or wick held in place by narrow neck of the glass bottle of the communist deceiver Molotov. So the wick was normally soaked in alcohol or kerosene. Then the bottle was hurled at a Russian tank or any other Red Army vehicle. This is it. Any kind of bottle will do. Just got to be glass. It's filled with this cocktail of alcohol and motor oil and kerosene. And the rag can be set on fire, but won't ignite the rest of the bottle until the bottle breaks. Because the neck is wedged tight. There's not enough oxygen for the flame to go down the neck of the bottle. So it's a very simple, easy to produce weapon. And this is what the Finns were using to fight the Red Army. When the bottle smashed on impact, the ensuing cloud of fuel droplets and vapor ignited the attached burning wick or rag, causing an immediate fireball, followed by spreading flames of fire, which ignited the remaining fuel. So, the origin of the name Molotov cocktail came from the communist propaganda which the Soviet minister Molotov espoused during the Winter War. As they were bombing Finland, the Soviet minister Molotov declared to the world that the Soviet bombing missions over Finland were actually airborne humanitarian food deliveries for their starving neighbors. Dead serious. I mean, nobody can lie like a communist. As Vladimir Lenin said, treaties are like pie crust made to be broken. To tell the truth is a petty bourgeois habit, but to lie and to lie convincingly is a sign of superior intelligence. And so they know how to lie. Therefore, the Finns sarcastically referred to the Soviet cluster bombs as Molotov bread baskets. Well, these are Molotov bread baskets. And so, to go along with the devastation caused to their homes, buildings, churches, bombed by these humanitarian food baskets from Molotov, they decided to use their handheld firebombs to attack Soviet tanks as a Molotov cocktail, as a drink to go along with the humanitarian food parcels. So it's just part of Finnish humor in a time of war that explains why they are using. I don't know if the journalist writing about protesters throwing Molotov cocktails at police in Philadelphia understood the etymology or the history behind the word, but it's worthwhile that we do. And this is what a Soviet armored column looked like after the Finns on skis with the Molotov cocktails had caused havoc, invigorated by their saunas, of course, in the middle of winter. So this was a brutal war, but the Finns fought the Red Army to a standstill, and while they lost some territory, the integrity of their country was sound. The historic origin of both the term Molotov cocktail and this napalm-like weapon of war should shed some light on the disinformation being broadcast about, quote-unquote, mostly peaceful protesters. Molotov cocktails have never been part of any of our protests, and I don't see the need, and I don't think it would be appropriate. So to speak about protesters throwing Molotov cocktails. And here are some of these characters in Minnesota preparing a Molotov cocktail just this last week. And not just in Minnesota, but in New York. You can see New York Police Department vehicles set on fire. Reportedly, at least 145 cities across the United States of America have been ravaged by violent riots, looting, and arson attacks. It's just mind-boggling. And many of these places I've ministered in, I've visited many times. We've got friends there. Lots of friends all over these places. It's quite disturbing to hear about this. And by the way, it does no harm at this moment to just point out the grass is not greener on the other side of the fence. The amount of people over the years who, oh, you know, if I could only go to America, get away from all the violence and riots in South Africa and so on. Well, you know, these things happen everywhere at different times. And I'm convinced that we should be where God has planted us and put down our roots and be a blessing to the areas where we are. And we believe in the future. We believe in the sovereignty of God. I am not someone who hankers after going to other countries except to minister and come home. Minneapolis police station was put on fire. Now, I mean, who would have thought this would be possible? The police chief ordered his policemen to vacate the station and allowed these arsonists and looters to loot the entire police station and burn it to the ground. And by the way, in burning it, they burned all the case files, fingerprints, evidence, processes, in how many cases? Which means there's a lot of law cases that come to a dead end. The police central precinct of this major city, torched. Here it is, going up in flames. The police station was abandoned without a fight. Because, in fact, the police chief said that he hoped that allowing the protesters to occupy the police station would show their goodwill. His excuse at this was, my primary concern is the safety of my personnel. Now, that's not actually true, because I've been the fire brigade, and the primary concern of the fire officer was not the safety of his firemen. It was the life and property of the people who we were to protect. And so we were sent into harm's way. We were to run into burning buildings, and we had to rescue people, and some of our people got badly burnt and injured as a result. Our safety was not the primary concern of the fire brigade. In the army, I wouldn't say the commandant's primary concern was our safety. They put us in harm's way. They put us where there was lead flying. And did you ever feel like your commander's primary concern was your safety?
No, they make it clear that you must lay down your lives for your friend. If you're pinned down under fire, your commander will tell two of you to stand up and run in a direction, knowing that you're dead and you know you're going to die. You know what I mean? So that they can see where the fire's coming from. So
right.
Nate Saint,
One of the five missionary martyrs, Nate Saint, a Missionary Aviation Fellowship missionary who died at the hands of Orca Indians, Wadani Indians in Ecuador, he said, in the army, we had to realize that in order to achieve our objectives, the victory, we had to regard our lives as expendable to achieve our objectives. He said, missionaries must have the same attitude, that we are willing to lay down our lives in order to achieve our objectives. And if you're not willing to, there's a lot of bad people storm all over you. Now, how many of you have heard you don't need a firearm because the police will protect you? Well, now the people have just discovered in America, no, they won't. They will stand back. They won't even defend their own station, which actually was built by your taxpayers' money in the case of the people who live there. But imagine a police chief deciding to let looters take over the police station and destroy it and just order them to withdraw. They literally retreated in the face of the mob because they didn't want to cause casualties amongst the other side and they didn't want to fight. I mean, they had weapons. They could have fought, could have protected. This looks like a defendable building. I mean, if it's not on fire. Literally thousands of businesses have been looted, damaged or destroyed by rioters, arsonists and looters. And by the way, if you're thinking this is something we've had here, actually it's worse. Because having been to America many times, well over 40 different speaking tours in America, you look at America and you think, and I've said to them for the last 35 years, you people are unprepared. You live in glass houses and glass buildings and glass shops. They don't have, like we have, laminated armor plate windows with bars and with screens coming down. They don't have any of it. It's just glass. It's everything. And the door has got one little lock and little rinky-dink thing that you could pick, but you don't need to worry because it's got a glass pane exit for you to break to just open the door on the inside. They don't even have a key that you need on the inside because they've got a switch on the inside for opening the door. And anyway, you don't even need to break the glass for the front or back door, both of which have got glass panes in it. And it's a flimsy door anyway. You could put your hand through it. But because as how many times when I've been staying with a person in America, they'd say to me, if we're not here when you get back, the key is under the mat. Or the key is on the ledge. Or the key's in the flower pot. Wow. I mean, three options. And housebreaking's got to be really boring in America. You don't even need to break anything there. Yes.
Obviously, the police have been disarmed by what happened to in the,
oh,
the
yes.
other case.
We're going to get
they,
there.
They didn't want to act because they would be wrong. Whatever they do.
They had been gaslighted, They had been Stockholm syndromed. They had been guilt manipulated. They had been shamed. They had been so psychologically warfared, neutralized, that they weren't willing to fight. Now, as Sun Tzu said 2,500 years ago, the best way to win a war is not to fight at all, but to get your enemy to give up. That's psyops, psychological warfare. Talk about winning hearts and minds. Well, they destroyed the hearts and minds and the morale of the police. Who wants to be a policeman in America? And this, by the way, if you can't tell, that is a shoe store. And these are people not just attacking, but they're taking films while they're doing it. And petrol bombing cars, burning them out. I mean, remember, these things represent people's lives and property and dreams. And, of course, nothing's more important than looting a liquor store. And these are the sort of the 7-Elevens. And absolutely no shame, not even using the masks, Nike stores. What has looting a Nike store got to do with putting right and injustice? And I don't know what this store is, but it looks expensive. And they probably got the bag inside the store and just filled it up with things. But again, you can see America's just wide open glass. They don't have protection and security because they've been used to living with law-abiding citizens. And a lot of Europe's like that too as well, although less so. But America is so wide open. I've looked at time and again, thought this country is totally open to terrorism. They haven't even got a solid wall. Their houses are such that if somebody shot a bullet, it would go through every room in the house and every room in the other house until somebody was there to stop it, because their walls are paper thin. They just, when you see in a film somebody punching someone through a wall and you think, no way. No, you can do it with the flimsy materials they make the houses of. You know, our houses are built of brick, but theirs are built of paper mache and crushed sawdust. And so they need certain types of bullets that will stop in the wall instead of just through every wall in the whole street. Because, I mean, there's nothing really holding these things up. And even a house that looks like it's built of logs or stone normally isn't. It's just fake. It looks like it. It's like on a movie set. And these big shops, this is sort of like our Macro, just trashed. Again, where's the security? Fires were set in historic St. John's Episcopal Church on Lafayette Park in front of the White House. When we were at the White House, it turned around. This was exactly directly on the other side and of the street. So this is facing the White House. Over 200 years, in fact, virtually every single one of the presidents of the United States of America have worshipped in this church, 200 years.
Do you think this was orchestrated? I mean, the fact that it exploded around the whole country.
Yeah.
Was it organized or was
definitely
it opportunism?
No. This is... Opportunism doesn't even explain 10% of it, not even 5%. This is orchestrated. This is as organized as an orchestra. Yeah. And nothing happened by accident. And that's what Franklin Delano Roosevelt said. Nothing in politics happens by accident. If it happens, you can be sure it was planned that way.
There's an interesting comment that the day most of these riots started was the same day that Hillary Clinton was in court about Benghazi. Coincidentally.
Well, you'd be forgiven for having missed that. It wasn't exactly top-of-the-hour news. Remember when Bill Clinton had his big scandals coming out with Monaco? They started a war with Serbia, started bombing Serbia. Just sort of wag the dog thing, get a war on the front page to bump a court case and scandal off it. If you think that nobody's that disgusting that they would start wars where people die just to distract attention from a scandal of theirs, well, yes, if you understand people like the Clintons, they would. More than 50 Secret Service agents in Washington, D.C. were injured trying to protect the White House from riotous mobs. I didn't know they had 50 Secret Service agents on duty at one time. For 50 to have got injured in one time, that's got to be a record. A bad record. These sort of facts can ruin a good media narrative, because the media narrative is mostly peaceful protesters with righteousness on their side protesting white police brutality. And who could object to that? And yet the facts ruin that narrative. With literally thousands of businesses devastated, just in the inner city of St. Paul's, Minneapolis, where it began, 270 businesses, including some big ones, colossal ones, trashed, destroyed, torched, vandalized, looted. Billions of dollars worth of damage and losses across the United States. I don't know if it's as much damage as the lockdowns caused, but it's a lot of damage still. And the reported narrative of spontaneous rage at police brutality seems tenuous. Initial reports indicate there's evidence of orchestration behind the scenes. For example, at many of the scenes, pallets of bricks were just positioned in place where there wasn't even a building site. They're just there, right, you know. Awfully convenient. And by the way, you don't go to town and have all the ingredients for a Molotov cocktail just in your bag, you know. Okay, let me just whip this up. This takes planning, coordination. We know what it takes to organize a life chain, and we're not trying to destroy anything. The coordination of this would be huge. And the sinister Antifa, which, by the way, stands for anti-fascist, I think they should just call themselves communists because that's what they are. Antifa is a terrorist movement, and at last they've got a president who's called them that. And they plainly played a very pivotal role. By the way, Antifa's always having masks, so it seems that the lockdown rules for fighting the so-called coronavirus makes everyone look like Antifa. And that's got to really help them. I've heard that just this last week, we had a Pietermaritzburg bank robbery done by people dressed up in medical garb, that they were coming in with white outfits, masks and so on, and they robbed a bank, dressed like they were... Sorry? Oh, well, pretty good for medical research team. Vladimir Lenin spoke of constructive chaos to advance revolutionary goals. Now, understand, if you're an evolutionist, you believe that a huge explosion created everything. I mean, there was nothing, and then there was this big explosion that came from nowhere, and it created everything. Yeah, and dinosaurs and giraffes and everything. So constructive chaos. The logic is if you throw enough bombs into a junkyard, you'll get a 747 jumbo jet or something like that. So order comes out of chaos. This is what evolution believes. And this is what communism believes, literally. You throw enough bombs, you burn down enough stuff, utopia will rise out of the ashes. Make sense? Well, if you're a communist, it makes sense. The issue focused on is seldom the real concern. Their motivation is normally the furthering of the revolution by discrediting all resistance. So, you see, it's not about the poor versus the rich. It's not about the employers versus the employees. It's not about men versus women. It's not about feminism. It's not about black versus white. It's not about any of the issues they're saying. It's not class. All these things are just pretexts. The real issue is the revolution and destroying or discrediting anything that stands in the way of the revolution, such as fathers. It was pointed out, well, that Hollywood's most hated villain is the father, the patriarch, because there's nothing worse than a straight male. I mean, homosexual males, that you know, that's one thing, but a straight male, a father, head of a household, family, I mean, that's like evil, evil. And as one communist said to me, he said, white males are good only for fertilizer. Kill them and put them in the ground. Said, yeah, a white female can still be used to make brown babies, but a white male is good for nothing but to kill. There's nothing you can do with a white male except kill him. And I had that straight from a communist straight to me. As the National Guard deployed in 23 states and curfews were declared in many cities, the question needs to be asked, what role has the mainstream mass media played in fanning the flames and pouring fuel on the fires of violent discontent? Well, CNN called these mostly peaceful protests. And you can even see, if you want to get real news on this, just put Google in for Tucker Carlson on Fox News. And he shows you videos of what's actually happening. And you actually see CNN people standing in front of a burning building speaking about the peaceful protesters. You know, they can't even lie convincingly. They should at least have blacked out the screen when they were talking. In the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, they called it propaganda. In America, they call it news. In fact, in Russia, there's this lovely lovely joke that they used to use. You know, Pravda is the main newspaper. And the second main newspaper was Izvestia. Now, Pravda means truth, and Izvestia means news. So the Russians would say to us, there's nothing true in Pravda, there's nothing new in Izvestia. It's just, yeah, I mean, they understood. When Alexander Solzhenitsyn came to the West, now here's Russia's greatest author of the 20th century, spent years in concentration camp in the Soviet Union. He's the one who wrote the Gulag Archipelago, One Day in the Life of Ivan Denisovich, We Never Make Mistakes, The Cancer Ward, and many other great books. Alexander Solzhenitsyn said, when he came to the West, he said, and this is his unforgivable sin at Harvard University. They never reported on him again since 1978. It was like he died. From being beloved of everyone, he became persona non grata. He'd committed the unforgivable sin, which was, he said at Harvard University, behind the Iron Curtain in our communist countries, the media speaks with one voice. And we're not surprised because it's a one-party dictatorship and the media control is controlled by the one party, so they speak with one voice. He said, now I'm in the free democratic West. And your media also speaks with one voice. And it's the same voice I heard behind the Iron Curtain. Who controls the media in the West? And at that point, I mean, it's like Solzhenitsyn died. The media just ignored him thereafter. He had committed the unforgivable sin. How dare you suggest that the media in the West isn't free and fair, printing all the news that's fit to print and all that sort of thing. The media is not a reflection of reality. And I know this because, for example, I marched 30,000 people to Parliament. That's what the police said, 30,000 people, 1995, in May, to protest Mandela's new constitution, secular state business. And the Argus said 3,000 people marched to Parliament, and the Cape Times said 300 marched. I mean, hey, just a couple of zeros missing, but... and it was virtually... And what did that headline say? Angry Christians marched to Parliament. And I don't remember seeing any anger at all. I mean, we're singing hymns and there's lots of... And we've got the photographs and the videos. It was just very positive. There was no angry Christians. I don't know what they're talking about. But that's the sort of junk. Everything we do, they misrepresent. They misreport. And what they say about homeschoolers and Mozambique and Sudan and everything else. So I've seen the media lies everywhere that I've been. So I know it. And now it's time to go over the carefully selected stories that have been chosen to manipulate your emotions and your thinking. Well, I think they exaggerate. I don't think there's much thinking going on if people are listening to the Clinton News Network or the Bolshevik Broadcasting Corporation. The zoom lens of selective reporting ignores the wide-angle lens of context. Why did they choose that subject? Why did they make that the front page? Why did they choose that title? Why did they use those words? Why did they select that picture? Out of all the hundreds of pictures they could have selected, why that picture? And there's selection. I mean, these things don't happen by accident. Frequently, the mainstream media misses the big picture. Your silence is consent. Jail killer. We'll get back to this later. Justice for Floyd. Please, I can't breathe. I can't breathe. George Floyd, I can't breathe. Say his name. George Floyd. Now, according to the narrative, this man has been promoted to a national, if not international, saint. Now, the fact is, and this doesn't justify whatever was done, because it looks to me from what I know, and gee, I don't know the people, I wasn't there. The only thing I know is what other people have told us, just like I'm sure all of us here. But still, from what we can see, it was police brutality. And I haven't heard anyone standing up trying to defend what the policemen were doing. People are only condemning it. So there's no disagreement there. But this George Floyd does not have a spotless record. He has had multiple imprisonments for armed robbery, for assault, including assaulting a pregnant woman, putting his gun, home invasion, putting his gun against to pregnant stomach, you know, threatening to kill a baby if she didn't cooperate while her ransack was still flat, of multiple drug things. And even when he is arrested by the police, apparently the video shows plainly he had cocaine on him. There's a pack of cocaine, white pack that's on the ground next to him. Media's not talking about it, but apparently it's quite clear there. And the head of the police union in Minnesota came out with saying, listen, the police would have immediately seen his sheet. This chap had a lot of... He had multiple times been in prison for multiple offences, often violent offences and so on. Now, there's other people saying, but in recent days, he became a Christian. Now, that could both be true. I don't know the full story, but certainly there's no doubt he had a criminal record and a violent criminal record. And there's no doubt that nobody should be treated like that either. That doesn't change it. But this narrative that the moment they select on someone, whether it's Steve Biko or whatever, they convert into a saint and you can't say anything bad about them or put context to it. The policeman's 100% evil and the victim is 100% saint, totally innocent and so on. Prosecute killer cops. And by the way, here are the four white officers that the media keeps talking about. They only show you a picture of one because the other three are plainly not white, but you know, you mustn't change that. The fact that Arab and Chinese and so on, that's not relevant. So these are the four white officers the media keeps talking about, and that's why you'll only see a picture of the one, because it messes with the narrative to show. In fact, this is a thought crime for me to have shown all four pictures, because you've just got to know that there were four white officers, and all whites are racist, and all policemen are racist, and so on. Now, Justine Rizchever, who is an Australian, she is also murdered by a Minnesota cop. Justin Damond, because she is engaged and about to be married, called the police to report a noise in the alley. She thought that there was a woman being assaulted there, maybe raped. She is talking with Officer Matthew Harity in the patrol car when Muhammad Noor, sitting in a passenger seat, pulled out his gun and shot her multiple times, killing her, they say. Now, this was on the 17th of July 2017. And the police statement said, Officer Hannity said that Justine Damond approached the driver's side of the door of the two officers immediately after a banging noise was heard, although and Muhammad Noor shot her in the stomach. Now, she was in her pajamas. She is barefoot. She was concerned about a woman screaming in the alley behind her home and that she is being assaulted and need to be helped. And the police, to try and justify what happened, said, we thought we heard a bang on the car just before she appeared at the window. And but they did fingerprints all over the car and so on. There's no evidence of her fingerprints being anywhere on the car. So that may be a story made up. But still, she was talking, and there's no doubt that this is wrong. Now, notice the press reports. Australian woman in Minneapolis fatally shot by police officer. Notice it doesn't say white woman shot by Muslim officer. Minneapolis police officer fatally shoots bride-to-be. Not Somalian police officer shoots white woman. Bride-to-be killed by officer after calling 911. Again, not white woman killed by black police officer. Why the difference in terminology from the George Floyd? Her fiancé. By the way, the Australian government was horrified, Prime Minister made, about, you know, this is just disgraceful. Now, would you believe it? Somalians and Muslims turned out in force to defend the police officer for shooting this unarmed, innocent woman. How many people have gone out to protest in support of the police officers abusing this George Floyd and kneeling on his neck for 9 minutes? Do you know anyone who's gone out to protest for those policemen? These people were happy to come out to the justice system false, racist system, victim of identity politics, black Muslim immigrants guilty. So what they're saying is because he's black and Muslim and immigrant, he's not guilty, is what they're saying. They're using reverse psychology here. Do you know anybody on the planet who's protesting for the policemen who abused this George Floyd? But somehow it's acceptable to assume that because he's a black Muslim immigrant from Somalia, it doesn't matter if he's innocent or not. He should be released because it's a racist system, and how can you accuse him? So what if he shot? I mean, after all, she's just a white woman. I mean, in Somalia, that's nothing. First of all, she's kafir. She's not a Muslim. And she's a woman, which is not worth much in Islam either. So the contempt of the Somalian. And by the way, this policeman was wanted. He had many complaints about abusing and assaulting women already. But he had, both the police officers had their body cams off. Well, they said they did. so you couldn't watch a video of what actually happened. But maybe they didn't, they just switched it off or deleted it or whatever happened. But is that acceptable? Here's a WhatsApp. I wonder how it would be if a white cop shot a Muslim woman for no reason and his body cam was off. Would that be a problem? Now, a neighbor to Muhammad Noor, the killer cop, said he was ill-tempered, he had little respect for women and blacks. Well, I mean, he's a Muslim, so what do you expect? They've got a culture of disrespect for women, and they've got a culture of disrespect for non-Muslims. So do you want people... And he was, by the way, fast-tracked into the police force, and big fanfare, the first Somalian-American police officer in Minneapolis. And he was trumpeted, and he had, in the short time he was in the police force, lots of complaints about his abuse against women in particular. You know, slapping and so on. Well, there's some people asked for justice for Justine, but they didn't riot. They didn't murder. They didn't loot. They didn't throw Molotov cocktails. And this chap might have gotten away with it if it hadn't been for family and friends speak out. Now, whoops, sorry, this is the wrong thing. How did this picture get here? You silence this consent? That can't possibly apply to this because, you know, who cares about a white woman anyway? That all that really matters is black criminals. Here are the facts. Killing by law enforcement officers in America, the darker the red, the higher the amount of people killed by police officers. Now, every year in America, about 1,000 people are shot dead by police officers. Not spoken about how many are shot, but how many are shot dead by police officers. It used to be around 600-700 a year, 800 a year. It's been climbing. It's been 1,000, 1,100, 1,200 over the last year. So it's climbing every year. But they're getting more lawless in America. Now, welcome to Chicago. Here's the mayor. Mayoress, whatever. Stay home or you'll be arrested. Stay 6 feet apart or you'll be arrested. No gatherings in groups of 10 more or you'll be arrested. Unless you burn down a city, loot, or riot, then it's okay. And that's honestly their policy in Chicago. Now, police killings of blacks has gone down by 70% in the last 50 years. Even a crime has gone up. In 2012, 123 blacks were killed by police using a firearm. In 2012, 326 whites were killed by police using a gun. So actually the narrative that you're more likely to be shot if you're black than if you're white is not true. In fact, they have proven that a white is far more likely to be shot by police than a black because they're terrified of the repercussions that could come if they shoot a black person. Doesn't matter how violent he is. Here's the US crime statistics for 2015. Remember when Ferguson took place. Blacks killed by whites, 2% of the killings. Blacks killed by police, 1%. Whites killed by police, 3%. Whites killed by whites, 16%. Whites killed by blacks, 81%. And of the stats of blacks being killed by other blacks is 97%. The fact is, if George Floyd had been killed before he was born through abortion, most of the protesters would have cheered, applauded, and helped fund it. They don't care about his life. He's just a symbol for their revolution. Now, the impression given is that whites are the attackers and blacks are the victims. But in fact, in America, 90% of all interracial crimes are committed by blacks against whites. So there is a disconnect, but it's the other way around from what the media is telling you. The war on whites is happening all around, and you do see it. And there's a lot of, especially amongst Muslims, disrespect for women. Now, here's just New York City. And they're saying, if you took black people out of New York, you'd have 83% less rapes, 91% less murders, and 96% less shootings. So they are disproportionately involved in the crime, and therefore disproportionately you'd expect involved in police violence. However, the real cause for this has been shown by Walter Williams and others is because back in 1960, before the whole war on poverty, before the whole socialist welfare system came in by LBJ Johnson, the average black family was more intact than the average white family. Blacks were less likely to be born in a single-parent household than whites were. Blacks had a stronger church attendance than whites. In fact, they had a stronger family unity, less divorces, and more likely to be church-going and so on. But since 1960s, with the Great Born Poverty and the Great Society, now the vast majority of black people in America are born in a single-parent household, do not know their father, or have a very bad relationship with their father. And one of the biggest contributing factors to a life of crime, drugs and gangsterism, is a fatherless generation. And so it's got nothing to do with skin. It's got everything to do with sin. It's not the race that's the issue as much as the lack of grace. And the state, there's a book written by Walter Williams called The State Against Blacks, how the U.S. government, by subsidizing irresponsibility, the moment a girl gets pregnant out of wedlock, the state gives her a lot of money and she can set herself up on her own. And so if a person's got an abusive, unhappy situation at home or they're just rebellious, you want to get out of home, get pregnant. The state will give you enough money to set up your own household. And what is this doing? It's destroyed. The black male's not needed. I mean, he's just a sperm donor. I mean, yeah, he can go join a gang, get drunk, do drugs, whatever. It doesn't matter. He's not needed because daddy state's going to look after the baby and the mommy. There was a case a while ago, reported in America, of three generations on welfare, none of whom had ever worked. There was a 28-year-old grandmother, the 14-year-old mother, and the baby, all born out of wedlock, none of them married, three female welfare junkies, three generations of female junkies, welfare junkies, in the same household, all under 28. That's what welfare's done. It's destroyed the black family in America. Destroyed quite a lot of white families too. But the issue here, and black pastors like Bodie Buckham point this out, the issue is more about men not doing their duty and being responsible and the state pushing the man aside. And of course the feminists screaming and demanding it too. So what you've got is, this has got more of a sociological explanation and a spiritual explanation and an economic explanation, and yet they want to make it all about race, because it's got a lot more to do with a lack of grace.
You know that Ben Carson,
yes,
he's had a lot to say about welfare and so on. He's a pediatrician, neurosurgeon.
Yes.
But he said his mother was a single parent.
And who was illiterate.
And she couldn't read, but she said that she's not going to take the social welfare because you become dependent on it. And she used to send them to the library to read and to write a report on what they read. And she couldn't read what, I didn't realize, but she couldn't read what they had written, but she would tick it and things.
We've read his book, watched his film, it's great.
She encouraged him to study and to and not to accept all the welfare in that. So he reckons this whole welfare state has destroyed their culture and their identity, their families, the whole thing.
Ben Carson straight. He says the best thing you can do with someone on welfare is get them off it. Mm-hmm. So black Americans are 12% of the U.S. population, but they commit 32% of the rapes, 34% of assaults, 54% of the robberies, 49% of the murders, 91% of murdered black Americans are killed by other black Americans. And that's from a 2010 U.S. Census and also from the FBI 2012 crime statistics. Booker T. Washington, who was a friend of Teddy Roosevelt, said, "There is a class of colored people who make a business of keeping the troubles, the wrongs, and the hardships of the Negro race before the public. Having learned that they're able to make a living out of their troubles, they've grown to the settled habit of advertising their wrongs, partly because they want sympathy and partly because it pays. Some of these people do not want the Negro to lose his grievances because they do not want to lose their jobs." Now, this has been pointed out by a number of good friends of ours, like you can just take Reverend Stevie Croft, who was at one time a criminal and a drug dealer and all arrested before he got converted, and he's a trophy of grace today. And he says, we've got to ask ourselves, if the problem is whites, white government, white leadership, white police, and all that, oppressors, then why is it that black people do worse under black leadership? He said, you go to countries where they've had black leaders, or you just go to states in America where they've got a black governor, or you go to cities in America where they've got a black mayor, or you go to cities where they've got a black police chief and a majority black police force. And he says, why is it that there's worse crime and lower employment and more unemployment and more drugs and more crime when the blacks are under black leadership than when they're under white leadership. He says, so this destroys your narrative. And he said, I used to also be a Democrat. And he said, I'd never vote for Democrats again. You know, they're the party that keeps us down because they're the party of socialism. And he's a, you know, he's now enthusiastic Trump Republican because Stevie Croft and others say, this is all about sin. This is wickedness. And socialism doesn't care about the black man, but they'll use him, just like they'll use women, the workers, the young, whatever the issue is, it doesn't matter. They don't care about the people they're using. You're just cannon fodder. The whole issue is to advance the revolution. And Booker T. Washington understood that. Okay, interracial violent crime. You can see black on white crime right up there. It's 547,000 incidences a year. Black on Hispanic crime, it's 112,000. White on black is 59,000 incidents in America. White and Hispanic is 207,000. Hispanic on white is 365,000 incidents. Hispanic and black is 41,000 cases. And so the media is focusing on one of the smallest of the categories because that's what fits the narrative. Black Lives Matter. I've got a few of my white Christian pastor friends publishing Black Lives Matter signs. So I put All Lives Matter in the Sight of God on my friend's post, and he jumped down my throat. You don't understand. You don't know what it's like. But you know, I've lived in black homes, in black countries, in black churches, more than all of my liberal friends. And I've spent so much time in the field. I think I know black Christians better than them, and the pagans too, because I've also been in prisons. But so I know the situation probably better than almost any other white person in Cape Town. But he said, I know nothing about it. And not that he's been to these areas, but because I wouldn't accept that black lives matter. I said all lives matter. And that's apparently a racist comment. So whites killed by blacks, well, that's that percentage out there. But blacks killed by blacks is the majority. And of course, they don't care how many black people were killed in Chicago last weekend. Apparently, every single day, blacks are being murdered by blacks in the cities like Chicago and New York and so on. And these protesters don't care. Oh, and by the way, these four black policemen were murdered in these recent riots. Just saying. Their lives don't matter either, I guess. You've got to remember there's a narrative going on here. When you control opinion, as corporate America controls opinion in the United States by owning the media, you can make the mass believe almost anything you want and guide them as you please. So the best thing we can do is disconnect from the lamestream, fake news, controlled mass media. The Bolshevik Broadcasting Corporation, the Clinton News Network, Sly Magazine, Useless News and World Report. The media tells you who you should love, who you should hate, who you should fear, and what to think, and they're the virus. Do your own research, think for yourself, and stop being their puppet. You know, the amount of people that we know who hate Donald Trump, they've never met him. What do they know about him? Just what they've been told. But I remember I would go to America in the 1980s, and I would have a stranger at a telephone, phone and radio program swearing on a Christian radio station against me because I'm a racist from South Africa. Excuse me, have we ever met? Do I know you? No. Well, how do you know I'm a racist? You've admitted you're a South African. Everyone knows that all South Africans are racist. Okay, so when last were you in South Africa? I've never been, but that's not the point. I said, well, actually, I think it is the point because if you came to South Africa, you'd understand the situation is not that simple. In fact, some of the most compassionate people and some of the best friends Africa's ever had live in South Africa. You don't know the country at all. And actually, this chap, on this particular occasion, KKLA, Los Angeles in California, I just wouldn't let up. And I said to him, are you a Christian? Yes, he is, which I would not have guessed from his language. But I said, are you pro-life? Yes, I'm pro-life. I said, does your media tell the truth about the pro-life cause? No, they don't. They don't. And what did you think about the Last Temptation of Christ film, which had just come out? Blasphemy. And do you think that the media represented your protest at Universal Studios accurately? Because he said, I was at the protest outside Universal Studios against this film. Do you think they represent your protest correctly? No, they didn't. And so why are you trusting the same media about when they're talking about Christians in another hemisphere, another continent that you've never been to? And do you know, to his credit, the man apologized on the air and said, I'm sorry, you're right, I never thought about it like that. And that's unusual. On rare occasions do I get a person, either in a university or at a public meeting on radio, to admit they're wrong. Most people won't admit they're wrong. But sometimes it happens. But just get people to think. So we in South Africa, do we know what it's like to be lied about? When Andrea went up to America to study there, people would ask, do you have do you have electricity where you are? Do lions walk in the streets? Do you have the internet? And they really didn't understand what Cape Town's like. And, she found it quite funny. But the thing is, we know what it's like to be lied about ourselves and people not to understand. So why should we jump to conclusions and assume we know everything about Donald Trump or about Americans or about policemen in Minneapolis? What do we know? We only know what we're told. And if we haven't been there, and if we don't have personal friends, I actually have a few friends in Minnesota, and I've been there a few times, and I've had a lot of arguments on their university campuses, but that's another story. But we must never accept the garbage, literally. You know what junk food is? Junk food is what comes from McDonald's and so on. Well, junk food for the mind comes from CNN and BBC and SABC and all that. And the BBC is not called the Bolshevik Broadcasting Corporation by many of its people for nothing. They are a bunch of pathological liars. I must say, they're very convincing. I mean, they're dressed in their nice suits and they speak with a nice, intelligent accent, measured tones, but they lie. I know they lie. And what's quite funny is to watch on the BBC when the BBC ever interviewed Ian Smith, because, of course, they hated Ian Smith. I mean, he represented everything there alone. And Ian Smith could never be flapped. I mean, he'd survived 6 years of the Second World War. He'd been shot down twice. He'd spent 5 years behind enemy lines. I mean, he feared God. What's he to fear? So they would be ranting and raving against him. Ian Smith would just say to this BBC interviewer, but that's not true. You haven't done your research. You don't have the facts. That's not the way it was at all. And they're, they say, no, that's not right. In fact, we had a qualified franchise. And he had answered. They never got him upset because he had the facts on his side. And these arrogant Brits who often walk over, storm over their people interviewing, they could not get Ian Smith to be phased or flapped because he knew what it was to be under fire. And he could stand under fire and he could give it back to them better than they could give it. And these are not places where you expect fair, balanced, honest reporting.
Sorry, can you just go back? If you just go, don't forget to pay your TV to receive your live propaganda 24 hours.
They've got to pay TV licenses in Britain. In fact, our friends there, like Andrew Carrington, say, do you know he's got to, Britain's one of the few places along with South Africa, we've got to pay a license, even if you don't watch the cursed, blasted, damned state television propaganda indoctrination gulag. Mind-sucking zombie nonsense. I mean, why would you want to? We had someone on the phone the other day trying to tell us to pay our TV license. We haven't watched SATV in 30 years. Why am I going to pay any TV license?
But at least it admits it's propaganda.
Well, it is propaganda, yeah. You can be sure the BBC didn't do this.
Like
yes, but the BBC, how they lied about us in Rhodesia. And they lied about us in South Africa. Why should I trust them when they talk about anything else? It's time to confront the real virus in this country, and it's a mind virus. It's the state indoctrination gulag. Wherever there's a big story in the media, look for the story they're trying to distract you from. I mean, have you noticed what was the big, 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 colossal issue in this country before we had the lockdown? Well, looting of the country, state capture, stealing 34% of the gross domestic product of the country every year by corruption, government corruption, the looting of state enterprises like South African Airways, Eskom, and so on. And suddenly, who cares about that? The important thing is this coronavirus. And yeah, what are they distracting from?
They're praising the state for acting so promptly.
Oh, I mean, the Karens. Yeah, there seems to be a pattern of ignoring terrible atrocities by Marxist revolutionaries and ongoing persecution of Christians in Islamic lands. Proverbs 24:24 says, whoever says to the guilty, you are innocent, will be cursed by peoples and denounced by nations. Now, as one example, during President Obama's 2013 visit to Africa at $100 million, described as the most expensive presidential tour ever, he visited Gori Island across the bay from Dakar, the capital city of Senegal. And there he is photographed, talk about photo op, the slave fort's famous door of no return. Obama's quote is saying, this is a testament to when we are not vigilant in defense of human rights, what can happen? But he was silent on the much larger ongoing Arab slave trade that still plagues Africa. Anti-slavery societies calculate that over 41 million people are victims of slavery today, more than it was when William Wilberforce fought against it. According to UNICEF, 1.2 million children are trafficked every year. Most trafficking victims are girls between 5 to 15 years of age. As a whistleblower documented, that the UN's running it. Many of the governments who enjoyed most favored nation status with Obama's United States are still involved in the modern slave trade. In fact, from Gori Island, he could see Mauritania, where slavery is still practiced, which has 500,000 slaves amongst the country's population of just over 3 million. So 1 in 6 people in Mauritania are slaves. Well documented, and books like Silent Terror. Obama did not have a single word to say about this ongoing scandal, even as he took his photo op press statement in front of the island fort when he could see Mauritania, where they had their slaves. In 2011, four Mauritanian anti-slavery activists were sentenced to 6 months in jail for protesting the enslavement of a 10-year-old girl. Now, these weren't the slave traders. These were the anti-slave traders. They were the activists against slavery. They were imprisoned. No punishment was ever meted out to the slave owner, and a slave girl disappeared. President Obama never referred to that, and he hypocritically stated that his visit to Gori Island, a World Heritage Site, gives me even greater motivation in terms of human rights around the world. Now, it's hard to take that seriously because Obama never said a word about the ongoing 1,400 years and counting ongoing Arab slave trade. Although he made a major point of visiting Gori Island on the west coast of Africa, condemning the transatlantic slave trade to the Americas, which ended over two centuries ago, he showed no interest in visiting Zanzibar, the most notorious slave island in history on the east coast of Africa, even though he did visit Dar es Salaam in Zanzibar, in Tanzania. And although his second state visit to Africa was Tanzania, he never ventured near the island of Zanzibar, which you would have thought would be an obvious thing to do, through which 20,000 African slaves are processed every year. Now just look at this photo op. See the photographer crouching down here? Giving an impression of President Obama walking amongst the happy people of Tanzania shaking hands. But notice, three lanes deep, behind all the Secret Service agents, see the red carpet, see the security all around. And all these people are wearing the same outfit, same, and they've got alternately American flags and Tanzanian flags, and it's total photo op to give a false impression that he's walking amongst the people when actually these people were being screened, wandered, checked. It's a chosen mob. It's rent a crowd. Perhaps Obama was concerned not to embarrass his Muslim friends who are still involved in the slave trade today. Also, a visit to Stone Town on Zanzibar would have been even more embarrassing, as the former slaves, having been liberated by the British Royal Navy, built a magnificent church over the old slave market with a pulpit and altar by where the auction block and whipping post had stood. And the Anglican Cathedral Christ Church in the centre of the old town occupies the area where the largest slave market of Zanzibar used to be situated. The construction of this cathedral was intended to celebrate the end of the Arab slave trade in Zanzibar, and also particularly gives tribute to David Livingstone's work in exposing the Arab slave trade. And so you can understand why he didn't want to visit Zanzibar. So why would Barack Hussein Obama, an African-American, continue to be so supportive of radical Muslim regimes who still engage in slavery today? Because black lives don't matter if they're Christian. Why is he so silent about the largest and longest slave trade in history, one that has not yet come to an end? So, you know, it takes no courage to walk up and kick a dead dog, especially one that's been dead 200 years. But to go for a live one would take a bit of courage. But Obama's not willing to tackle the present-day slave trade. He just wants to wax eloquent against the one that ended 200 years ago. Now, how brave is that? The ongoing slave trade in Mauritania is well documented, as is the slave trade in Sudan and other parts of the Muslim world. But rather than using his visit to Africa as an opportunity to draw attention to the ongoing slave trade in Islam, he is satisfied with sermonizing about the need to be vigilant in defense of human rights on what ended 200 years ago. But he remains shockingly silent to this day on the hideous abuse of human rights taking place right now with countries with whom America had most favored nation status. As a missionary to persecuted churches for the last 40 years, I've walked and worked in the killing fields of Mozambique. I've documented the burning of Bibles, destruction of churches, massacres of Christians by the Marxist Frelimo dictatorship. The Soviet and Cuban ships shipping out food out of a country where a million people died of starvation, a man-made famine. People starving in a green country, exporting food, destroying of churches. But black lives in Mozambique didn't matter, not to CNN, not to BBC. I've served suffering Christians in MPLA-controlled Marxist Angola documenting the destruction of churches, burning of Bibles, murdering of ministers by communist Cuban troops, and the Marxist MPLA forces. Documented the faith under fire in Angola and the churches there that were suffering under communist persecution. We've worked in Zimbabwe since 1982, where Mugabe's thugs have cut off the ears and lips of people for speaking against him. Cut off the lips of this woman for speaking against communism. Shot in the back, these Matabele with their hands tied behind their backs. Well, these black lives don't matter because they're Christians. This village headman shot with his hands tied behind his back by Mugabe's thugs. This man bayoneted in the back over 18 times with a Chinese pig sticker bayonet in the SKS. But notice the hands tied behind his back. What type of person bayonets on the back whose hands tied up? This is the boot on the neck of black Christians in Samora Michelle Avenue. What used to be main road in Salisbury. This is in Harare. Church people who were having a prayer march for peace. His hands raised to the whip. This is black police in Zimbabwe whipping their own people with a boot on the neck. Beating Christian women gathering for prayer for peace and justice outside the High Court. These men had their arms broken by the police for voting for the opposition, the MDC, and leg. This is police brutality in Zimbabwe. These black lives do not matter to the American media. This is in Nigeria, and you can see how they treat people at a military roadblock. Wouldn't you like to have martial law under a government that cares for you like that? And of course, this is not that far away. This is in South Africa. In Rwanda, I walked knee-high and sometimes waist-deep in corpses in churches interviewing the survivors of the Rwandan genocide and documenting in my book, Holocaust in Rwanda, the disgraceful roles of the United Nations, the French and Clinton governments, and the Liberal World Council of Churches affiliated church leaders and the manipulation news media, all of whom were complicit in the genocide of 800,000, mostly Christian Tutsi, in Rwanda. In Sudan, I was eyewitness to the scorched earth, the Islamic Jihad, and the genocidal war waged against Christians of South Sudan and the Nuba Mountains. Churches bombed by helicopter gunships. Destroyed, burned. Scorched earth. Devastation. Bombed. These black lives never mattered in the eyes of any of the media in America. They never covered this. They didn't care. Do they care about black lives in Africa? Not if they're Christian, they don't. I document all this in my Faith Under Fire in Sudan book and the Sudan, the Hidden Holocaust and Terrorism Persecution films. And these films show the slave trade carrying on, the bombing, the enslavement, the whipping, the crucifixions, the maiming, the chopping off of hands and feet. Strangely, the secular mass media took little interest in the plight of millions of Christians persecuted in communist and Muslim lands in Africa and Asia. Apparently not all Black Lives Matter to CNN, not this Somalian Muslim who got converted to Christ, who was buried up to his waist and stoned to death, filmed and shared on social media by Al-Shabaab. Anyone know this man's name? They don't care. His life doesn't matter to them. Your silence is consent. I'm sure they're not talking about what I've just shown, because their silence is consent to this. Jail the killer. They don't care about the killers of Christians in Africa, because black lives don't matter to them, except if it's going to serve the revolution. They certainly don't care about the Christians in Egypt who are being massacred by Muslim Brotherhood. White lives obviously don't matter, not in Zimbabwe, not in South Africa, not anywhere, actually. Their lives don't matter at all. And the thousands of white farmers tortured to death by thugs, Marxists in this country, that doesn't matter. Obviously not. It's documented, it's factual, but these names are not known to the media because they don't care. Are you not culturally enriched by all this? So it turns out that when it comes to oppression Olympics, first prize goes to the Muslims, a silver medal can go to the blacks, and the LGBTs can get third prize, and for participation, the feminist movement can get a special award. The most racist people are actually the ones crying racist all the time. Apparently race is a social construct, but they support affirmative action. Your average anti-white says there's no place for racism in society, and then they blame everything on whites. Apparently race doesn't exist, but white people are evil. And so you've now got these whiteys who, they've been practicing this, I think, for a while in Britain. Wear so sorry t-shirts and wear chains and beg for forgiveness on the streets. Apparently that's happening this week. John Wayne said, "I'd like to know why well-educated idiots keep apologizing for lazy and complaining people who think the world owes them a living." As he also said, life is tough. It's tougher when you're stupid. Political correctness is suicide. It's cultural suicide. It's insane. It's, in fact, economic and practical suicide. Only biblical Christianity offers a rational basis for opposing racism and pursuing justice. Equality before the law is a biblical principle. The community is to have the same rules for you and for the alien living amongst you. This is a lasting ordinance for all generations to come. You and the foreigner shall be the same before the Lord. The same laws and regulations will apply both to you and to the alien living amongst you. Numbers 15:15. How easy is that to remember? Numbers 15:15. Do not pervert justice. Do not show partiality to the poor or favoritism to the great, but judge your neighbor fairly. Leviticus 19:15. There's neither Jew nor Greek, slave nor free, male nor female, for you're all one in Christ Jesus. Now, Galatians 3:28 doesn't say there's no more distinctions, because the Bible tells you. Now, to younger people, I'm saying this. To older people, I'm saying this. To the young men, I'm saying this. To the older men, I'm saying that. To the young woman, I'm saying this. To the older men, I'm saying this. And you can see it. To the employers, I'm saying this. To the employees, I'm saying that. So the Bible still recognizes the distinctions. This doesn't mean you can now say, well, I can go into a female's bathroom if I self-identify as a woman, or I can take part in women's gymnastics if I suffered. It's not saying distinctions change. It says there's only one way of salvation. That's what it's talking about. That's the context. For he himself is our peace, who has made the two one and has destroyed the barrier, the dividing wall of hostility. From one man he made every nation of men. Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he's a new creation. The old is gone and the new has come. All this is from God, who reconciled us to himself through Christ and gave us the ministry of reconciliation. That God was reconciling the world to himself in Christ, not counting men's sins against him. And he has committed unto us the message of reconciliation, first to between God and man, and then between man and man. And so we're told to love God with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and we're to love our neighbor as ourself. Truth is truth for those. Truth is hate to those who hate the truth. Truth is a new hate speech. In a time of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. So this presentation tonight has been a thought crime in the minds of the New World Order. It doesn't matter what you say. It doesn't matter what I say. It doesn't matter what they say. What really matters is what the Bible says. So, There are positive and practical constructive ways to respond to abuse. Although I've experienced artillery, rocket and aerial bombardments at churches I was ministering in, and although I've been imprisoned and abused and incarcerated and tortured and waterboarded in communist prisons, I've never responded to these atrocities that I witnessed or that I endured by advocating or participating in terrorism or any violence. No, that's not how Christians respond. I wrote books, I helped produce films, I gave presentations at churches and conferences, I was interviewed in the radio and TV programs, I testified at international human rights conventions and to members of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Senator Jesse Helms was very positive. He read my whole Mozambique report into the congressional record, defunded Frelimo from foreign aid and all sorts of things, which brought an end to the persecution there. I testified to members of the British Foreign Office in London, spoken to BBC, International Society of Human Rights in Frankfurt, and places like that, mobilized prayer movements, such as the International Day of Prayer for the Persecuted Church, IDOP Africa. It's important to pray the Psalms. It's important to take injustice directly to God. It's important to seek His intervention, to pray against evil, to shine the light of research and investigation on dark dealings of the persecutors of the church and those guilty of atrocities, to speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves, to be a voice for the voiceless, to do something positive. Some people said, how have you managed with what you've experienced? By doing something positive. Otherwise you'd get depressed. Doing something constructive to help build a better future for families, for faith, and for freedom. And one of the most positive things we can do is get Bibles into Africa. We have distributed hundreds of thousands. In fact, I think it's now over 1 million Bibles across Africa, and most of those into Sudan, actually. And we've helped with Bible translation projects, putting the Word of God in people's hands in schools and cultures, because we believe hope for the future is getting people back to the Bible. Truth does not fear investigation. It's important we do not rely on only one source of information for our news and views of the world, because when you look at their truth, you find it's made up of a lot of lies. We need discernment to understand the times. And Agenda 2, Master of Deceit film, is brilliant. 2 hours explains the world, the media, education system, the agenda of Marxism. This isn't a conspiracy theory. This is an agenda. It's a published agenda. And we've got the film here. We'll gladly, you can borrow it out the library anytime. And to know what God's people should do, understand the times and know what God's people to do. We need to evaluate everything in the light of God's word and seek to be positive, practical, and solution-focused. How is it possible that so much police energy was focused on arresting hairdressers, surfers, joggers, and people walking their dogs? And yet when St. Paul's Minneapolis erupted in violence, the police chief evacuated his personnel and allowed rioters to occupy, vandalize, loot, and torture Central Police Station? So we learned that if you attempted to open your business during a lockdown, you could be arrested. But if you looted a business last week, the police left you alone. So you can be arrested for opening a business, not for looting one. So this is a dangerous lunatic. He wants to open his business. This is a righteous protester. He's stealing a flat screen TV. But remember the World Health Organization guidelines for looting. Only 10 looters at a time in a store. Wear your mask, stay 6 feet apart. Now, isn't it amazing how all those riots going on and no one's catching coronavirus? Who knew the cure to coronavirus was riots? So people exercising, running, surfing arrested, but those throwing rocks and Molotov cocktails were unimpeded by police. This, by the way, is, look at the amount of police. What is that? Crime Stop. And this is the most important thing for the police to do. Don't worry about state capture. Don't worry about looting and violence and that. Those surfers, they're the problem. Oh, this is in California, arresting some poor soul for running or jogging on the beach or some crime like that.
Keeping their social distancing as well, the surfers.
I would have thought. But those throwing rocks and Molotov cocktails unimpeded by police action at St. Paul's. So the excessive state overreaction by enforcing a culture of compulsion and coercion during COVID-19 lockdown provides a stark contrast to the hands-off withdraw approach of the police in all too many cities torn by violence, arson and looting, which all started, of course, in China. And that's where they've gotten the whole way of how to deal with it. So I think this is seriously disturbing that the model of dealing with the lockdowns come from the very China that produced the lockdown. It's one of the most totalitarian dictatorships, centralization imaginable all over the place. But remember, wash your hands regularly, don't touch your face, and wear a mask. Because if you can't see the virus can't harm you. And so this is where we are. You've just got to stand still whilst you go through the indignity of people where you're guilty till proven innocent, and they can have intrusive all sorts of things all over the place. I mean, it's just, it's dehumanizing. This is just so wrong. But I don't know what he's doing in a uniform. He's never been in any army before. Yes. You're quite right. It's totally unconstitutional, and the High Court has found so. The lockdown is completely unconstitutional, violates a Bill of Rights. Why do we have a Bill of Rights? We have a Bill of Rights that no law is valid if it violates a Bill of Rights, which includes you have freedom of speech, freedom of worship, freedom of movement, freedom of association, freedom of conscience. All of these things are violated. Freedom from warrantless searches, they can't do this. But just look at this in Karachi, in Pakistan. But seriously, look how they're treating people. This is the way the Chinese do it, where they've actually got like cattle prod thing to control a person. It's wicked. But this all over the world, just whipping people, attacking. This is just criminal. And here the taxi overloaded. Phew, I thought they were for us for an overload taxi. No, somebody's walking their dog. Got to catch a mouse with a mask? Fine for chasing birds, not allowed under level 4? It's for your own safety. Don't you know COVID-19 could kill you? And unfortunately, these aren't just cartoons. They're telling you a truth. This is unfortunately what's happened. And all of this abuse. So they lock the bathrooms so you don't spread germs, put portable bathrooms in front of locked bathrooms, but now you can't wash your hands. Ay. Quarantine, remember, used to be for people who are sick. Now quarantine is a word they use for people who are healthy. All the churches are closed due to corona concerns. But it's safe at Pick and Pay and Macro. That's fine. Okay, there's not much there maybe, but the abortion clinic is open. The liquor stores are now open, but the churches are closed. So that you understand, shutting down the whole economy will have bad consequences. Translation, I want people to die. I'm not worried about government overreach. Translation, I want people to die. What about my constitutional rights? Translation, I want people to die. The virus originated in Wuhan, China. I want people to die, and I'm a racist. Trump has managed the situation fairly well. I want people to die, and I worship at the shrine of Trump. The WHO kind of blew it on this one. I want people to die, and I hate science. I sure would like to go for a jog today. I want people to die so I can jog over their lifeless bodies. And then people swearing, stay at home. I have an unlimited love for humanity, and I believe together we can end death for good. You see, this is what discussion is with a Karen or with somebody who's really into these lockdowns and so on. You might have libraries of books in your mind, but they've only got a few slogans. Like, Trump is bad, Ramaphosa is wonderful, you know, things like that. Now, remember, report non-essential activity to your local political commissar. And did you know we had so many snitches and rats and spies and Securitate and Stasi KGB informants in your neighborhood? And by the way, do you know this all comes out of the Soviet Union Politburo's playbook? Because what is communism? You need permission from the government to work, to travel. The government determines who can do what, when, how, and where. And you've got to be having permission for everything. Yes, you're going to say.
I also found it interesting that Trump was heavily criticized for calling it the Chinese flu because it originated from China. But still today, we call the Spanish flu the Spanish flu.
Yeah. And it had nothing to do with Spain. Spanish flu originated in America, and it came from their vaccines that they were vaccinating soldiers they're shipping over on the ships over to Europe for the war. But America had sent ship, all the warring nations in Europe had sent ship, But Spain wasn't a belligerent in the First World War. So Spain were the first to report on it. And so it was called a Spanish flu, but it had nothing to do with Spain. If anything, it was the vaccination flu. But they're happy to damn the whole of Spain for one of the worst viruses ever to hit the world. But the Chinese flu, which actually came from China, from a biological warfare lab, by the way, and they lied about it, that's racist. Just remember, what you've been dealing with, it's communism. This is nothing to do with science. And you think this is acceptable? This is what they want in our schools. I mean, really? I was brought up believing that fresh air, sunshine, open, it was good. But apparently wearing a mask and breathing in carbon dioxide all things are good. This is all part of a large agenda. I think you're being paranoid. But wear your mask and where's the gloves? And have any of you noticed that we had this, that's the Cuban flag, you know, that island paradise that millions of people have escaped from across crocodile-infested and shark-infested waters? Well, Cuba sent us volunteers, except we had to pay 2.5 million rand for each one of them, most of which goes to the government, doesn't go to them, because that bankrupt island, which once was a paradise of the Caribbean, exports, like they used to export the soldiers, and the people had to pay for the soldiers who killed them and burned their churches in Mozambique and Angola. You've got to pay for these doctors who might take out the wrong organ and things like that and amputate the wrong limb. But these Cuban doctors are mercenaries for Cuba, and it's been exposed. We've got the whole details there. So we paid effectively 2.4 million rand per individual flying them over here, while we have thousands of white doctors out of work in South Africa because they're the wrong color, too male, too pale. But Cubans are coming in who don't necessarily speak our language to fill the gap because of the medical crisis, while there's doctors willing to work, but they're not allowed to because they're the wrong color.
They're not doctors, in fact. They are nurses. They're not fully trained.
Well, I'm sure they're not doing any good. But do not worry, because the top six running the COVID council, they're looking to the ancestors for guidance. So I think this should be a great relief to everyone. In case you thought we were leaderless, these guys have a plan, and they're getting it from the tokoloshes and the demons, so everything should be just fine. So the COVID gamers release the criminals because of COVID-19, but jail the citizens because of COVID-19. And so violent criminals are let out, and small business owners are put in. Make sense? Embarrassingly, these great big hospitals were never needed, because those millions of deaths never happened. And remember the predictions? This was on the 1st of April, the prediction of hospital bed occupancy. But the actual data is it went down because so many people who had scheduled things couldn't get their treatments. And so hospitals have actually been less busy than rather than more busy. But facts like that ruin a good narrative. The American military sent this massive 1,200-bed hospital ship to New York Harbor to cope with all extras. And after a month or so in the harbor, after treating something like 170 patients, which is nothing for a 1,200-bed hospital ship, they went back because the crisis wasn't what they made it out to be. How many people die each day? Just look at all these stats, and that's COVID-19. That's every day.
So apparently they overestimated it by 131 times. The number of deaths.
That's what, 10,000% or something?
They were like talking about 20 million people dying in yes. America. They said initially that the death rate would be 4%,
yeah.
Out of 100.
Mm.
They've discovered that, I mean, even on the inflated statistics or statistics or whatever, that it's less than 4, instead of 4 per 100, it's
yes.
less than 4 per 10,000.
Yes, so... talk about faulty, you know, if a person's off 4 or 5%, that's pretty serious on a compass reading on a route march, but okay. But when you're off 10,000%, that's pretty serious. So let's face it, every day 140,000 people die around the world, every day. But they've been reporting on the COVID-19 stats like it's the only thing that matters. But what about cancer? And what about TB and cardiovascular disease? But I mean, hey, don't worry about road injuries. But nevertheless, they just you got to worry about that. That's the main thing. So world population, COVID deaths, 0.003%. So they've shut down the world, put 3.5 billion people in lockdown over something that's not even as deadly as the seasonal flu. Not even. But you will believe, or we will burn you at the stake of public opinion. You're a hollow cough hoax denier. Okay, what's really sick is our Bill of Rights and law and order and the Constitution. But thank you, government, for protecting me from a flu by completely destroying my livelihood, my job, my income, my marriage, my family, my health, my freedoms, and my liberties. What they've basically done is they are suffocating justice. This is what we are facing. David Rockefeller explained it to us a few years ago. He said, all we need is the right major crisis and the nations will accept the New World Order. Well, I never thought I'd see in my lifetime 3.5 billion people worldwide under some form of lockdown. And all the churches in virtually the whole world that we know of shut for Easter. Who would have imagined that's even possible? Our friends in Eastern Europe said, this is worse than the dark days under communism. Never had such... They didn't even have that much restriction on freedom of movement under the communists. This is really bad. And here, looting of food vehicles. Now, notice this looting of food vehicle. Do you see all these police standing here? This is on the N2. Notice this police vehicle in the foreground. Looting of this vehicle. And this is from the same store, Pick and Pay, that's been providing free food to the very community. Dunoon, here's Dunoon, where they burned out this truck and looted it. The same people, notice Pick and Pay, that were feeding the people in Dunoon for free. They burned this truck right outside Dunoon. I don't know. What can you say? At least he's wearing his mask. I mean, you know, let's get our priorities straight here. So all this provides another vivid example of the dangers of centralization and the advantages of decentralization. The Swiss model of decentralization is far better than the Tower of Babel, Egyptian pyramid, Nineveh centralization top-down approach to government. Revelation 13 warns us of the Antichrist goal of a one-world government, a one-world religious movement, and a one-world economic system. The Black Book of Communism documents what happened in the one-third of the world under communism in the 20th century. Death by government goes even further. The biggest threat to life has not been war, it hasn't been crime. The biggest threat to war in the 20th century is governments, secular governments, killing their own people. Recent histories document the dangers of the United Nations, World Health Organization, European Union, other groups working for New World Order. We've looked at this other night, not going into it now, but they're bad. Globalism is such a threat that in a matter of weeks, 3.5 billion people on the planet were under some form of government-enforced lockdown, which looked like some dystopian futuristic movie, which would have seemed ridiculously unrealistic if we'd seen the movies. Decentralization is the answer. When local municipalities control their own local police force, whose members are drawn from that local community, the safeguards are more effective. Local police recruited from the community, answerable to the local community, will not abuse their friends or neighbors. I mean, you wouldn't have a policeman from, I remember when Pinelands had its own police force. A person from Pinelands isn't going to be kneeling on the neck of someone from Pinelands when he might know this guy's sister and uncle, and everyone knows one another, know where they live. Abuse doesn't happen within the same community when the people aren't with that community. Nor would they withdraw and stand idly by while their friends, family, and neighbors' businesses and property are threatened or burned or looted, would they? Yeah. They would not. I mean, if this was their family or friends or neighbors, they wouldn't be standing back doing nothing. All that's required for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing. The global lockdown and the riots devastating so many cities around the states are just some of the results of globalism. And that's why the solution is not the George Orwell 1984 following the revolutionary herd where Big Brother's watching you, omniscient government surveillance, manipulation of public through state schools, news media, entertainment industry, historic revisionism, intimidation, social engineering. All of this doesn't look a joke anymore. This was written in 1948, the book 1984. But Orwell predicted the manipulation of language into newspeak with thought crimes published, punished by thought police. If thought corrupts language, language can corrupt thought. The ministry of peace ensures perpetual war. The ministry of truth uses lies and propaganda to distort all information, news, entertainment, education, and art. The people will believe what the media tells them they believe. The ministry of plenty controls rationing and ensures starvation. The ministry of love tortures and terrifies and crushes all dissent and resistance. Political language is designed to make lies sound truthful and murder sound respectable. The ministry of love would orchestrate two-minute hate campaigns and hate weeks. Right now we're in a hate week. Hate week on white policemen. Okay? To distract and channel the anger and frustration amassed towards a real or an imagined enemy. And the ministry of truth would also vaporize or expunge from the public record opponents of the state which couldn't be debated with or argued with. These would become unpersons who had disappeared down the memory hole. Like this disappearing commissar, just like that. All his friends around Stalin. The moment someone fell into disfavor, got killed and so on, it became unpersons, and they'd paint the person out of the picture. And they'd have to continually be revising the history. You see, George Orwell knew what he was talking about. George Orwell was a policeman for the British. He became a propagandist in the BBC during the Second World War, and he had visited the Soviet Union. So when he wrote 1984 and Animal Farm, he knew what he was talking about. Every monument needs to be replaced. Every street name needs to be changed. History itself needs to be rewritten in order to accord with current policy of the ruling political party. The most effective way to destroy a people is to deny and obliterate their own understanding of the history. The first battlefield is the rewriting of history. Whoever controls the past controls the future. By controlling the present, you can control the past. By rewriting history. As he wrote, every record destroyed or falsified, every book rewritten, every picture repainted, every statue and street name removed, altered, the process continuing day by day, minute by minute, history has stopped. Nothing exists except an endless present in which the party is always right. Solzhenitsyn wrote the book, We Never Make Mistakes, quoting from the Communist Party. While they promise him liberty, they themselves are slaves of corruption. For by whom a person is overcome, by him he is also brought into bondage. Who will rise up for me against evildoers? Who will stand up for me against the workers of iniquity? This is what we are fighting against. Corruption on the highest level. It's much better to have person to person, church to church. We need to reject globalization, centralization, disinformation, the revolution and the agenda, work for decentralization, reformation, and pray for revival. The Cape has been under a lot of foreign flags. We need to declare independence. The Cape needs to be free, needs to be independent. This is how we break away from the agenda. And we've just had the best example in the garbage and propaganda that's been thrown at us in what's gone on in the COVID-19 lockdown and what's going on up in America. The only solution is decentralization, secession. We're dealing with an apostate church, a lawless society. We've been writing and speaking these things for a while, and we've got some of the weapons to use in this battle. We've got to understand our history, and we need to understand the banksters who are financing these things. Stephen Mitford Goodson was a regular speaker here and explained what was behind much of this. So, any questions, any comments? Yes. Yes.
How do you picture us being in a better position to help the rest of South Africa?
Well, there's no doubt that you can be far better helping a neighbor if you're able to be strong. So, for example, if you're on an aircraft and they will tell you in a safety demonstration that if in the unlikely event of the cabin losing pressure, first put on your own mask before attempting to help other passengers. You can't help the other passenger if you have lost consciousness yourself. Similarly, as a paramedic, your first job is to protect yourself. You know, you're dealing with bacteria, blood, so on, gloves, mask, so on. And then you help the person. Same thing when it comes to CPR. You've got different one-way valves and so on. So that's not unloving. You can't help the others if you're not free yourself. We in the Cape need to stop the looting of our money. If we know that we in the Cape are paying four times more taxes than ever gets spent in the Cape. So if we were independent, we could cut our taxes to a quarter. Actually, if we cut the corruption, we are convinced we could cut tax down to 1% of every bank transaction would be sufficient for all that we needed. Personally, I think we could make Cape Town a tax-free zone, a tax haven. You'd destroy unemployment. You'd create massive amounts of jobs. Like Hong Kong and Singapore, you'd get businesses moving here. There would be no unemployment if you had a tax haven. Tax and corruption is strangling our country. Now, we can't help the others while we're being looted from one-third of our GDP looted every year by the government. So independence is a matter of survival. Then we can help our neighbours. And personally, I think the whole country is going to break up into its logical parts. Kingdom of Zululand, Venda, you'll have Transkei, others will break away. I could see quite a few different states. Now, the two that are best positioned for independence is the Cape and Zululand. I'm not sure which will go first, but I think we will. I'd like us to go first, but we've got a lot of Zulu friends who are eager for independence of Zululand as well. No, I think the only hope is to get this empire dismantled. And I've seen it work before, because I've seen Yugoslavia break into six republics. And there's no doubt that Croatia, Slovenia, doing much better now than they were doing as part of Yugoslavia. Czech and Slovakia, Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia. Daniela's been up to Estonia and Latvia. Nice countries, beautiful people. When they were under the Soviet Union, they were crushed. I mean, they've become magnificent free countries since, hosting the Choir Olympics and so on. So just think what the Cape can be as a beacon of hope and freedom to all of Africa. If we could break out of this corrupt gangster state. I mean, it's just a criminal enterprise that's running the whole show right now.
What would need to happen for the Cape to become independent? Do we need a lot of people?
Well, what effectively, we need 2 million voters to vote yes in a referendum for independence. Now, according to self-determination, we can switch off the projector now, self-determination clause, which is actually in our constitution and in the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights and all that. If a majority of the population wants to secede, it's under self-determination in our national constitution and in the African Union's and in the United Nations. So international law recognises the right of self-determination. And we're living in an age where that's happened. I have seen in my lifetime Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, Slovakia, Croatia, South Sudan, I mean, Eritrea, there's a range of them, and there's others in the wings, Catalonia and so on, also moving. So I think this is the forces of history on our side. Instead of people rushing to join the EU, now with Brexit, you've got to break them away. Centralisation is a failure, and I don't think we've ever seen a more classic example of failure of centralisation than the World Health Organization imposed lockdown on more than half the world's population. This is a perfect time to show people centralization is bad because, for example, if Pretoria wanted to go on lockdown, why should we do it in Cape Town? If Cape Town wants to go on lockdown, why should Calvinia? For goodness sakes, most people in the crew can't even see their neighbours. Why must you have a one-size-fits-all? The whole country's got to do this. Why must the whole globe do the same thing? Why must we do what China does? So, but in a decentralised Cape, the vision we've got is of a confederation of microstates in the Cape of Good Hope. That's a long name. We just called the Cape of Good Hope. That's my suggestion. But what it would mean is each municipality would be a sovereign state, effectively, in a confederation. So Rondebosch would run Rondebosch. Paro would run Paro. Brackenfell would run Brackenfell. Burkop would run Burkop. If Burkop wanted to have Sharia law and be an Islamic state, I mean, go for it. But they just mustn't interfere with us being a Christian municipality here. So, and each single municipality would have their own police force and would run their own affairs. And you can be good neighbours and you can help your neighbours, but only if you're stable and safe. Now, there can't be corruption in a small unit, at least not much, not on the level that they've looted this country in the trillions. So, because in your municipality, you know the mayor, you know the town councillors, you know the police chief, they're your neighbours. In a small state, so for example, do you know what the size of a municipality used to be? The size of a city couldn't be loud further than the man shouting from the guard post could be heard on the furthest other end of the city. Obviously before PA systems. But realistically, the entities were manageable because everyone could know of one another or know one another's families. There's accountability. But in the present uni city, nobody knows, nobody cares. and they don't understand. So this is workable, but we know it's workable because we've seen what's happened in Switzerland, Singapore, Hong Kong. It can work. In fact, it must work. Because honestly, we either go down with the Titanic or we launch out. Okay. I don't see a solution other than that. Yes.
What is the Tate Party and the DA? What's the relationship between them to ultimately get to that goal?
Well, first of all, understand, I'm not a member of the Tate Party. I support their vision. They're the flag bearers for independence. I'm not political. In fact, according to the constitution of our mission, we are not party political. We can't belong to a political party in our mission, not the leaders of our mission. I support the movement for Cape independence. Now, we've got members of the Cape Party here who could speak, but on that, Hardy could certainly say about. But I think the DA understands the issues, and they're on the other side. The DA could go for a referendum and declare the Cape independence if they wanted to. They've got the majority here, plainly. But they don't want to, because they actually greedy for the whole country. Do you think
I'll try and hijack it and they see it's inevitable.
Yes,
best the harm.
Probably.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because notice, the Democratic Alliance, the DA, the main reason people vote for them is not because they're good, it's because they're not the ANC.
Yeah.
No.
And basically,
mm-hmm.
the best thing they've got going for them is that they're different. But they're still secular humanists, they're still pro-abortion, they're still pro-pornography, they're still pro-LGBTQRS, they're still pro-gambling, they're still like Sabbath desecration. They're not exactly a Christian party, even though a lot of Christians vote for them. And so the DA represents people's desire not to be under ANC, but they themselves don't represent a viable alternative to the corrupt shambles of this country. And the trouble we've got with the DA, I think Mark put it very well, is they unfortunately are doing what the ANC wants done more efficiently than the ANC could do.
Yeah. It's the ANC.
Yes.
Yeah. There is a country that seceded successfully.
Yes.
If you had any information, if you have any information on those countries pre-cessation and then post-cessation,
I do.
Could we have that for advertisement purposes?
Yes, indeed. In fact, I've done a study, and I think the notes are in one of those Perspex stands just behind where Hardy is sitting. I've got the video up. Successful cessations in the Bible and in history is one article, and it's a video. I gave it here. At a Reformation Society, and then we've also got eyewitness to successful sessions where I speak about my experiences in Eastern Europe and in Sudan. And I've looked at what happened before and how they achieved it, and while they're all different, there's some commonalities. So it's very exciting to look at this and realize this is not unfeasible. In fact, remember, the Cape has existed as its own entity for 380 years. We've got a longer history than the Kingdom of Zululand. And the Kingdom of Zululand celebrated 200 years just a short while ago, and they're proud of their heritage. Well, why are we in the Cape not proud of our heritage? Pardon?
So the one problem we have is if you look at these big corporations, they are giving money to the ANC and also to the DA.
Yes.
And the EFF. The same people. Sun Long, all the names. And I wonder, how one should handle that.
Yes.
That's interesting.
Okay. That ties in with this COVID-19 lockdown deal. You notice that who's been killed? The small businesses.
Yeah.
It's not upsetting Pick and Pay. It's not upsetting Barclays Bank. It's not upsetting Anglo American. They're in bed with the government. They've organized things, they pay it off, and they're comfortable. And so where are the police going? They're not closing down macro. They're closing down the family businesses. They're destroying the middle class and the people who are trying to move upwards. So this is communism, and in any communist country, they don't have a problem with the big multinationals, the Anglo-Americans.
Well, it's globalism and communism
exactly.
Working together.
They work together, but they're killing the small family businesses and farms, and that's, of course, the goal. So this COVID-19 is a gift from Satan, from the pit of hell into the hands of the communist Politburo. This is what they always wanted, which is control. What they've done is they've used the lockdown to advance the second phase of the revolution. First phase of the revolution is political control. Second phase is control of the economy and the cultural, educational, and other parts of society, which includes its churches. Yes.
As of late, I've recently found Trump has severed relationships with China and the World Health Organization.
Excellent.
For those of you who are aware, China's made a lot of investments into ANC, at the same source where we found the investors being similar to all the other K-party political parties. One of the major investors of ANC is the Chinese Communist
yes.
government. From videos that we've seen of Chinese tanks being imported into Cape Town harbors and things like that, with America severing relationship with China, and almost like us verging on the almost verging on like a civil war. What can we do as the normal person to ensure that we don't partake in a political war?
Yes.
And be seen as, because I know there's BRICS. I think it's Britain.
No. BRICS is
Brazil.
Russia, India, China, South Africa.
Yeah.
With the S in BRICS. That's meant to be an alternative to the EU American cartel. And so, interesting, that's why we suddenly had the Chinese and Russian Navy turning up here end of last year.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily a bad thing in that India and Russia and Brazil, that's good. China, that's bad. I mean, I understand why they were using China because China's big and it's an alternative to America, but China's really, really bad. I don't want to be on their side on anything. They use slave labor. They literally whip organs out of living Christian prisoners in concentration camps for people who, you need a kidney or whatever. And they will literally do it literally from unwilling people. They don't even sew the person up. They literally just harvest an organ and let the prisoner die. China's the most unethical government on the planet.
I found it interesting. I was watching a documentary on Netflix, so I know that what the documentary actually intended to convey wasn't how I ended up summarizing it for myself, but they were talking about Chinese scientists that were actually deployed in regions, especially in Australia, studying bats, and they actually found that in the research, one of the strains of viruses that they found in these bats at like 96% genetic match to the coronavirus, so if anything, they had more information than anyone else to see it coming if it were to mutate from one animal to another and eventually to humans and so on. I just found that interesting, but I'm not sure about the validity behind it all as well.
Well, obviously during this time of lockdown, we've been doing different research, but one of the best films that I've seen is the origin, or maybe the Chinese origin, or the origin of the Chinese virus. Now, the moment I uploaded it, it got blocked by Facebook, banned, and I was threatened if I did try to share it, I'd be banned and so on. But I had to share it by email with people. But if anyone wants, I'll put it out there again. It was very well made, showing how this was an actual planned attack by China on the world, and that they have had their heads of biological warfare research. And by the way, Wuhan is the center of the biggest biological warfare factory in the world, in the laboratory. The Chinese government have been running that for a long time, and China's got the biggest biological warfare capacity in the world. They're called asymmetric warfare. They've written books on it, and going back to 2013, speaking about the need that we cannot fight America directly, and that the best way to fight America would be using a pandemic in order to shut down the economy, to weaken them, and to then take control of a lot of businesses at fire sale prices while everything's depressed, to increase. So they're talking about economic warfare and using, and they've produced textbooks on this years ago already. And this has come out of their own laboratories, and there's so many. So this film, which has got a lot of high-powered, top-class, you know, generals and professors and medical experts on virology and so on, instantly banned by everything, every kind of platform, and YouTube wasn't allowing it. So, it's a really well-made film. I was going to show it tonight if it hadn't been for this whole disaster that's exploded from our friends in Minnesota. But still, I think it's well worth looking at that this is a deliberate, planned Chinese asymmetrical warfare. Now, China wants South Africa's farms. Why? Because you know that when they went for the farm invasions in Zimbabwe, one of the fringe benefits that came was one of the farms they took over turned out to have under its soil the richest diamond mine on the planet, the Mereng Diamond Fields, which is producing at the moment something like a quarter of the world's diamonds. And China came in, took it over. In fact, there was a lot of people doing farming there, and they sent in the helicopter gunships, machine gunned up the people. We're talking about 2008. They literally just shot the people to pieces with 30mm cannon, sent in the presidential guard of Mugabe's, tore up the place, brought in the slave labor. China came in, built a massive airstrip, airport. In came this Antonov 126, the biggest planes in the world. They'd fly straight from Mereng with the diamonds straight to China, not going through Harare, not going through customs. And of course, Zimbabwe government got things. They got planes, tanks, stadiums, whatever, as China normally does. But China got the diamonds. And none of the diamonds money ended up in a public treasury in Zimbabwe. Obviously, Mugabe and Mnangagwa got some money out of it, but the people got nothing. So they've got one of the richest diamond fields in the world. China gets the benefits now. They're convinced that under South Africa's farms, which are only for agriculture, there are, whether it's diamonds, gold, platinum, uranium, phosphates, whatever, cobalt, they want farms to strip mine them for whatever minerals are underneath. And the fact that people are going to starve, well, who cares? You know, because no lives matter in the eyes of China. Yes.
So what do you think is, what should one's view on Trump be? Because, you know, trust no politician.
Yes. Okay. I would think if you can look at Tucker Carlson's analysis, Tucker Carlson on Fox News recently, he's been obviously over the years a good supporter of Trump, but he's criticizing what he's done lately. And he says Trump's instincts are right, but his cursed son-in-law, Jared Kushner, is often misdirecting him onto very bad ideas. Mm-hmm. And this Jared Kushner is poison. I don't know why he listens to him. And he says when Trump goes with his instincts, he does the right thing. When he listens to advice from Jared Kushner, who's apparently closest advisor to the president, he inevitably does something wrong. And Jared Kushner's going to lose him the election if he follows it. So I think Tucker Carlson, as a friend and supporter of Trump, has given some very good critical on trying to explain why he's taken some missteps on this. For example, his first response was to condemn the policeman. Whereas, okay, understand how communism works. And it's gaslighting. It's Stockholm syndrome. It's guilt manipulation. They will push you. They will intimidate you. They'll get in your face. They'll get in your person. They want you to acknowledge something. They want you to admit something. Now, I've been subject to interrogations. And, I mean, intense. 6 hours at a time. Spotlights in your face. Waterboarding, suffocating, all that sort of thing. Hooded, you know, the good cop, bad cop, the whole deal. And so, in other words, they want you to give in. Now, one way to break is to get you to admit something, even if it's just something small. But the moment they get you to admit, okay, I'm sorry about that, or I was wrong on that, or something, just doesn't matter what it is, they're starting to win. And they break you down and break you down, because they're never satisfied, doesn't matter what. They use that to get a finger hold, toe hold, foot hold, stronghold, stranglehold, and they will crush you. The only way to deal with these creeps is a complete resistance. So, for example, at Parliament, I used to be invited there often to give submissions on these different hearings. So on one of which was against the legalization of pornography. And I was in Parliament arguing, subcommittee, about 50 of them there. And one ANC creep from the other side shouted out at me at one point during Christmas time, "Have you apologized for your role in the Southern Defence Force?" I said, "You want me to apologize for my role in the Southern Defence Force?" He said, "Yes." I said, "I'm sorry we didn't kill all of you." He said, "You people were putting landmines in roads where you knew that you wouldn't get the soldiers, because we drove them in armored cars. You were killing the civilians, the black civilians. You were kidnapping children to force into your camps, raping and murdering them, and brutalizing them, and turning some of them into terrorists to come back here. You're petrol bombing black policemen's homes. I'm sorry we didn't kill every last one of you communists." And I just doubled down, and you know, they all sat there, didn't say a word, and after a while, Chem said, right, and he went on to something else, and there was nothing else. But that's the only way to deal with it.
Yeah.
The only way, you cannot give them an inch. They will take you along.
Just to get back to the black guy that was killed by the knee on his head. You know, all of us have a worldview, and Americans, they don't know their worldview. But you know that we stand that man is special, is made in the image of God. But I can just imagine, I don't want to be impolitely or something, by the photo of the white man standing on a black person's head, and the title of Charles Darwin's book, The Origin of Species Through the Means of Natural
Selection.
By means of what? Favorite racism. So,
yes.
You know, that's the
preservation
worldview.
Of favorite
so
races through
what's wrong
natural
with that?
Selection.
What's wrong with a white? Because a black person here.
Oh, through survival of the fittest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Previous disadvantage, black person here, and he's oppressed by whites. That's what they mean by black. What's wrong with that?
Well, if you're an evolutionist, if you're a Darwinianist, Charles Darwin said that the white people in Australia must exterminate the Aborigines because the Aborigines are frozen at civilization levels, pre-civilization levels, and that they're holding back the evolution of the whole species. So advanced races must exterminate less advanced races. And that was Charles Darwin, and people were nodding when
yeah.
he was writing this junk in the 1800s.
That's really interesting. And off the subject, how did the Finns hold off the Ruskies? How did they manage to do it? What was their strategy?
Saunas, skis, and snipers. and Molotov cocktails.
Did they not have support from North America and that? But how did they hold off that?
They advance? Got no support from anyone. Although, to be honest, they got some secret support from Germany. But they. And to be fair, there were tens of thousands of Swedes and Norwegians who came over as volunteers to fight for them, but not with the support of their country. So other Scandinavians did stand with them, but they got nothing from Britain and America and so on.
They fought guerrilla warfare and so on.
But
they'd done well. Disappeared,
like
attacked, vanished, came again. Their Russians didn't know what hit them.
Oh, and by the way, if you go to Guinness Book of Records, the most successful sniper in history is a Finn. Who, if I'm not mistaken, it's off the top of my head, I think he killed something over 900 and something Russians, this sniper. That, you know, that what the Americans say is the greatest sniper in history, and what the Russians say is, nowhere close. The Finns have the world record in sniping.
And so you said if they give you news, look at what they want to hide.
Distract you.
Do they want to distract you off the fraud of the COVID, or do they want to distract you off something else, maybe political in America or something?
Okay, well, okay, America's got its issues. South Africa, corruption, state capture, ISHCOM, power failures, all this.
But this
but he's talking about this.
Yeah.
Okay, now, America. The big thing in America is, what's 2020? Election year.
Yeah.
America has elections every 4 years. Right. So, this is an election year. Now, historically, whichever political party is in power, if the economy is good, they win the re-election. And the incumbent overwhelmingly wins the election if the economy is good. It's always about economy. It doesn't matter about what's going on overseas, doesn't matter if there's wars overseas, doesn't matter who they're bombing. The important thing is if the economy in America is good, then the incumbent wins. And if the economy is bad, the incumbent loses. So, for example, after the disaster of Bill Clinton, Democrats were in disgrace. And George Bush easily took two terms as president. And at the last year of George Bush, and he was actually quite popular, but in October, just before the November elections, and they vote about the 4th or so of November, the economic crash, 2008, Inside Job, we've got the video documentary on the Inside Job, the banksters' bubble burst. Well, some people got even richer, but tens of millions of people lost their jobs, their savings, and their homes. It's an economic bloodbath, disaster. Although the top bankers didn't do any bad. Now, because that caused such economic crash, they called it the October surprise. There's often an October surprise that enables a new party to come to power. So, 2008, Obama was a nothing. Nobody had never done anything from, you know, community organizer. He'd never been a governor. He has nothing. So, how did he have any chance to come to power? Well, it was that, and at that moment, what was he saying? We're going to make the bankers pay. We're going to deal with. Well, in fact, they said the Obama administration was the most Wall Street dominated administration in history. He took all those people responsible for the crash, and he gave them high cabinet positions. It was just totally run by Goldman Sachs and all these other guys who just collapsed the economy, and then he bailed them out. Gave billions of taxpayers' money into the hands of these criminals. Now, Iceland jailed all their bankers and imprisoned all their politicians responsible. Iceland showed they have a real government. In America, they just showed they were all in the pay of these bankers or banksters. So what's going on in America right now is they tried to impeach Donald Trump because they don't want him to win. It failed. Then there was a whole lot of war things that happened. Then the lockdown. Now, he's coming to the end of the lockdown, and I think this is the third attempt to destroy Trump's chances at re-election, because, of course, Trump is vastly better than any Democratic alternative. So, you know, you can imagine if they get Hillary Clinton or Michael Obama or any of those guys.
Rip up the nosy.
So basically, in America, it's all about the economy, and I'm sure all this is actually people like George Soros and so on trying to destroy the economy to destroy the chances of Trump's re-election, so that they can really get another Obama-type character or a Hillary Clinton-type who can really use America to destroy more of the world. Just look at the destruction done to the church and to Christianity by Obama. His Arab Spring, where he betrayed all the stable Arab allies in the Middle East, such as Egypt, and brought in the Muslim Brotherhood. We went from 15 million Christians in the Middle East down to 11 million in days of Obama. 4 million Christians fled the Middle East. Now, these are people whose parents and grandparents endured centuries of Islamic persecution and stood firm. The church has never retreated as fast in the last 1,000 years as it has in our lifetime because of Obama's hideous policies of betraying every American ally in the Middle East and destabilizing the whole Middle East, which started this tsunami of millions of Muslims pouring into Europe, threatening the very survival of Europe itself. So Obama was catastrophic, but they're hoping Hillary Clinton could be even worse, and Trump's derailed that.
Yeah.
And that's why I think there's all that war against Trump.
So Vladimir Putin is a bit of a dark horse because the Russians have always been bad, but where are they now?
Okay, well, I personally am a bit of a pro-Vladimir Putin person, and it's interesting because most of my life the Russians have epitomized the enemy, because most of my life that was the heartland of communism and so on. But notice the mass media, the liberal, blasphemous, antichrist pagans who run Hollywood and the news media, they hate Putin. Now, they don't hate Putin because he used to work for the KGB. They hate him because he's against LGBTQ propaganda. He's brought in laws against gay indoctrination in the schools because he's pro-life, because he's encouraging Russians to have more families. He's changed the tax laws to encourage large families. And he's pro-Russian, and he's pro-Russian Orthodox Church, and he's against, for example, Russia's brought in laws that Americans can't adopt babies from Russia if they LGBTQ, gay, or anything like that. And so the Americans then said, well, he's banned all adoptions. Well, they just want to be sure that it's going to a straight family, not to a skew family. and so, you know, I mean, the Bible speaks about the Lord will make a righteous person's path straight.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things that, like, blasphemy is illegal. They had this this one group who desecrated a cathedral in Russia, and he had them all jailed and brought in very strict anti-blasphemy laws. So Russia's doing a lot of things against this trend. So where America made pornographic, perverted, homosexual indoctrination of schools compulsory, Russia made it a crime. You try and gay propaganda as a kid, you'll go to jail. So Russia's gone exactly the opposite direction of the United States on so many social issues. And next thing, Putin was warning the American people during Obama about the dangers of socialism. It seems bizarre. So in my lifetime, the evil empire moved from Moscow to Washington, D.C. And Trump said so himself. I mean, Washington, D.C. has been a source of a lot of evils in recent times. Destabilizing of how many countries like Syria, Libya, Egypt. In fact, the catastrophe that Europe's facing right now for Muslim migrants totally came from America destroying stable governments in the Middle East, which started this whole ripple effect. It's a disaster. And, America became an evil empire under Clinton and Obama, for sure.
I want to come back to the lab in Wuhan.
Wuhan, yes.
And the big pharma,
yes.
And Bill Gates.
Which is what I wanted to deal with tonight, but that will have to be another night.
Who's actually got apparently been very involved in making...
Totally.
Those
yes.
viruses
and China
and
Bill Gates are
it's very
yeah. totally embedded together.
Interesting
yes.
as well that Bill Gates had a TED talk 3 years ago, and he predicted that it wouldn't be a World War III, but a virus or a pandemic that would cripple the nation's
wow.
economy.
Yes. And so did Obama.
How could he know?
Yeah.
What a
yeah.
prophetic mind.
Yeah.
yes. Well, just beware of this. When you've got a eugenist who wants to depopulate the world by about 6 billion people, and he's
yeah.
wanting mandatory vaccinations for everyone, it's not to extend your life expectancy and your health. He's the biggest promoter of we need to bring the world's population to below a billion, in fact, preferably under 100 million. And he's promoting abortions and vaccinations.
Yeah.
Now, you understand abortions. That's going to bring the world's population down. But where does vaccinations fit in? Well,
yeah.
vaccinations are there to make you sick. They're not there
that's
to make you
healthy.
So if you understand that he also owns a lot of big pharma businesses, which
yeah.
they need more customers. So just as we know that Planned Parenthood promotes sexual promiscuity in the schools because it'll produce more abortions and build a business, and they're that open. People like Abby Johnson have said that what it's an open stated goal. It's not conspiracy theorists. This is what they do. So in the same way, Big Pharma wants more people to get vaccinated so more people will get sick so that they can sell their pharmaceuticals and keep you even more sick and
mm-hmm.
make sure they limit your life expectancy.
I also wanted to mention earlier, there's also a kind of research going into the way that they use antibiotics in food and so on so that we can build up a resistance to it. And I don't know if that's
well,
true.
Okay.
Well, so I've heard that more people can potentially die from that in 1 year than of COVID-19.
There's no doubt that present generations less healthy than my generation, so on and so forth, going back. All these people are suddenly gluten intolerant, dairy intolerant. Just they're not intolerant for things that have been healthy for years. They're intolerant to all the hormones and pesticides and genetically modified and they have been messing with the food supply. And how many people who just eat junk food, fast food, and drink all the carbonates and whatever's, and then all the people having vaccinations. Now, when I was born, they expect us to get 6 vaccinations. Now it's, how many vaccinations are they expecting people to get?
39 vaccinations before 8, and 69 before 80
yeah.
in America.
Insane. Now, I used to get letters telling me, you know, it's time to get your flu shot, and I've never gotten my flu shot. Like, who cares about an annual flu shot? Why would I want to? So, think of the logic of this. If you want to protect yourself from a disease, inject yourself with part of the disease. So, what's the best way to combat sin and live a holy life? Have a little bit of sin exposure. You want to protect your youngster from pornography? Give them some pornography. That'll protect them from getting into heart problems. Does this make sense to anybody? How is injecting you with some of the disease, and by the way, those diseases all include DNA of aborted babies and so on.
Yeah.
No, under no circumstances, on the genome standard here, never do I want any vaccinations. And I'm sorry I ever went for any of them. I think the vaccinations are on evil agenda. And by the way, early vaccinations killed, for example, Jonathan Edwards, one of the greatest minds America ever produced. At age 58, smallpox vaccination. He is, you know, one of the great preachers and the great evangelical awakening.
They also forget to mention how many vaccinations Bill Gates funds to test on black Africans throughout, and what about those black lives that matter, and to sterilize women.
Yeah.
Forth, so it's really
well, you know, when you get down to it, there's very few lives that matter in the eyes of Bill Gates. And you can be sure none of us fall into the category of lives that matter.
Yeah, his father was the director of Planned Parenthood.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
Oh, my.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
there's
one of the main donors.
We now call him Gil Bates.
Gil Bates.
You must go and do research. He's a transgender.
Oh, oh, Gil Bates.
Your man.
Oh, I see. Well, I've got here some notes. The notes on tonight's presentation. That's the text, the core text, Racism, Rights, and the Role of the Media in Revolution. But next to it, I've also got an older one that I did, but which is super relevant to tonight. Not that we dealt with it that much, but Racism, Rhetoric, and Reality, because this was when they were coming out with, you know, Everything Must Fall, and they were coming out with all that race business up at UCT. So I did a Bible study on it and some of the logic. So these are two that I think would help you if you're trying to counter the hysteria out there. Pastor friends of mine are posting nonsense at the moment on all this. And as I said, I just got attacked today for putting on this chap's post that he tagged me in. I mean, Black Lives Matter, and he challenged me to put that, and I said, All Lives Matter in the sight of God, and that was obviously a racial statement. They said, you don't understand anything. Respond, I actually do understand. I mean, I understand how the psychology of this works. This is psyops. Mm-hmm. It's psychological warfare. And I'm not going to play their game. So we don't need to, as Christians, we love our neighbors as ourselves. We do unto others we want to be done to. We don't play the race game.
Yeah. Sorry, it's crazy how it's also making people who you thought could have been friends or also like turn against you as well. Even if you don't even like say, like I put up a post that just asked some questions. I didn't say anything about George Floyd, and a friend just like attacked me and said that you basically don't care that he died. That's what you did.
Well, you could ask if they care about Justine, who was killed by that Somali. People wouldn't even know about the case. But the point is, realistically, it's hard for us to care about much more than our friends, neighbors, and our general circle around people that we know. We know more people than we can reasonably care for in a meaningful, biblical way. But they want you to care about someone you've never met, know nothing about except what they've spoon-fed you, selectively. And by the same token, they want you to not care about all those Christians being persecuted for their faith and so on. Whereas, as a Christian who's traveled these countries, I'm far more concerned about my Sudanese brothers and sisters in Christ than I am about some criminals and gangsters in Minnesota. I mean, hey, I've done some outreach in Minnesota, I've done some services there. If I had a chance to lead them to the Lord, I'd be glad to. But that's not my neighborhood. They can't expect me to be as invested in Minnesota as I am in Cape Town. This is our area. This is where we are doing a lot of our work. So, you know, for somebody to say, I love wholeheartedly some stranger I've never met far away more than anyone else, that's nonsense. It's not even meaningful. And these people walk around with this. You know the term they use? Virtue signaling.
Yeah.
You know, they're putting out their posts and so on. They're sending out a virtue signal about this George Floyd.
Yeah.
It's all part of a marketing scam. And the psyops, but when you see it, then you don't play the game, and then they get angry. And it's like this whole COVID-19. The whole world's going to die unless you wear your mask and hide in your home, you know, shelter in place, and all that nonsense. And just for 3 weeks, another two, and well, let's extend it again. And wait a minute, right from the beginning, I said, we need this 3 weeks just to get our hospitals ready so we don't get overwhelmed, because there's millions of people who are going to contract this and die. And then after a while you find, well, the facts were wrong and the predictions were wrong and the projections. And after a while, well, this actually has nothing to do with the science and the facts. And then they just start screaming at you. Because I'm not surprised they've changed the subject, because what they were pushing. So they've just done the biggest destruction of world economy ever, in advance of government intrusion on people's rights. And for what? It's a hoax. Well,
no.
Basically. Yeah, there was something there, but it didn't justify the lockdown. Yes.
Yeah. Sorry, excuse my ignorance, but referring to Care Party's independence again,
should this all be to collapse the economic state to introduce the new world order trading system and receive and almost pushing people into the corner to receive the mark of the beast?
Well, I can show you the Cape Party doesn't have that agenda. What you mean is, does the ANC have that agenda?
Well,
Cape Party's idea is decentralization and secession.
Oh, no, 100%. I believe quite highly in the Cape Party. We're actually doing, we're working alongside them. And,
okay.
I
but
really
the way you were putting it sounded like their agenda was.
No, it's, I try to be as open-minded. But nonetheless, I wanted to know if we are independent, are we in the position to continue trading independently
yes.
of the world trade?
Well, let's face it. Cape Town existed before there was a Johannesburg or Pretoria or anything else out there. This is the mother city. Cape Town's got a long history. We are a port city. We've got everything we need in the Western Cape. We've got a nuclear power station. We've got dams. We've got everything we need here. We actually don't need the rest of the country. They're leeching off us. Over 75% of our taxes is going to the rest of the country, not coming back here. And most of what's spent here is stolen by the government anyway, so... really and truly, we're not getting much out of this. It's like an abusive relationship. And I wouldn't normally advocate divorce, but in some cases of serious abuse, sometimes divorce is better than living under abuse. And in this case, the Cape's being abused by the government, who's also wanting to preach genocide against our people and come and expropriate our farms and properties without compensation. So why would you not want to get out while you're still alive in an abusive relationship? So... Again, independence makes sense, but we were never asked if we wanted to join the Union of South Africa. The British Empire just forced it on us. And why should we not be able to leave?
Yeah. Yeah.
But self-determination, that's the thing.
But you're going to need a lot of political will. You're going to need strong leadership and people to go for it. And I see only lots of division, lots of little... I'm the leader, follow me, and there's 15 people behind them. And that is a huge problem. I'm sorry, there's so many little warlords.
We are trying to deal with it.
Yeah.
I've been trying to get a forum together with all the different groups, and somewhat is working, some are cooperating, and others aren't. But nevertheless, I think the main players are, and it's interesting to see that there's been thousands of new applicants and people joining the movement, especially the Cape Party and Cape Exit, in the time of lockdown. So there's, well, what better example do you need why you need independence than this? How can some creep in Wuhan or WHO HQ up in New York decide what we've got to do down here? This I think is the best example that we've ever needed why you need independence.
Peter, would you say that we need to the Christians need to band together, we stand as as a united front? Would this be one of the areas, for sure, because
Christianity is strong in the Western Cape, and there's no doubt that we're overwhelmingly Christian, and we've got an atheistic communist government who says that they're seeking from the ancestral spirits guidance on what to do.
Yeah.
Why would we want to be under that?
Sure.
We'd rather be under...
I mean, if you look at the propaganda that we've been exposed to, the billions they're spending, the amount of lies, I think literally everything we know is probably false. And there's this guy called Mike Fabregas who says, he's got this beautiful expression to say, with a single question, is that true? If you can give an answer to baptize someone's mind in truth. And it's such a nice way of saying it, because if you give the truth, you can just see people realize, and they're spending billions to deceive people.
Yes.
With a single little seed of truth, you can destroy all of that.
Light is more powerful than darkness. Truth is more powerful than deception.
It's been as a youngster, I mean, I'm only 23, and I'm born and bred Cape Townian. It's amazing. What's unfortunate is how much I realize, like, I can't really trust. But also the amazing thing, obviously there's always hope. And learning about Cape Party and their movements and the potential prospects, that's, you know, much has been trying to cover it up underneath the dust. We see practical ways in which we can liberate ourselves.
Yes.
which is why I backed the Gay Party. I just wanted to slide
well,
that in there.
Well, remember, the five key culture-carrying, culture-transforming institutions that Marxists try to infiltrate and subvert: education, entertainment, news media, religious institutions, political institutions. Now, of them, the most important is education and news media. Now, when you disconnect from the state indoctrination gulags, I mean, this has got to be the best thing about the lockdown, is keeping kids out of those useless, worthless indoctrination gulags. Home education is the first step. That's certainly the best. News media, disconnect from the world's news media. Who cares what SATV and CNN says? You know, log into alternatives, and there's lots of good alternatives. We've got newsletters around here. Tucker Carlson, CNN, if you are on Fox News, if you want to hear about the American side. We've got others that we'd recommend. I've put a lot in the Henry Morton Stanley website and Facebook page with good links. And then entertainment. Well, we've got a lot of good recommended films, which are, have redeeming value. Just about everything you get from Hollywood's junk. So, you know, being selective about what we allow, what we read, what we see, what we listen to. So when we start to think independently, that's the first step towards independence.
Yeah.
You can't get independent if you're a slave of the state.
Yeah.
Waiting for a handout from the state and dependent on the state and believing their lies. So that's the step. And then, of course, you know, church, party, and so on.
But I just want to say that the church in the Western Cape is full of liberation theology.
Sadly.
It is very, very sadly lacking in biblical worldview.
Yeah.
If you are a pro-life person like I am,
mm-hmm.
you know how small the church is with the biblical worldview
yes.
and with the right thinking of a, I mean, it is just abysmal what the church is up to. So I don't think that the church is going to make us independent.
Sadly not. Many are also in the system.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Well, first of all, if your ministers are trained at a university like UCT or Stellenbosch, that's not exactly going to help foster an independent mindset.
Nope.
And if you're getting your news from SATV or CNN, and so you can see why, if the church isn't really careful, and that's why I started a project of preaching to every book in the Bible, because most pastors never read every book in the Bible, never preach through it. So to get back to the Bible, well, you first have to read it, believe it, teach it, apply. So, honestly, what we're talking about in a nutshell is Reformation Revival. Back to the Bible for Reformation and Revival. Good. I know we've gone way over time. You know? It's because we've been starved of doing this for so long.
One thing that I've noticed in the media quite often recently was that the words misinformation and fake news, do you think that's another tool people can use to silence freedom of speech?
Yes, yes. Well, but no. The thing is, I think we started it with fake news because they are fake news. Now they're trying to accuse us as fake news.
Mm-hmm.
But how Trump's taken CNN's fake news, which are, and dare I say something else, the world wants you to ignore the real heroes.
Yeah.
And they want you to take fake heroes. And that's why I don't like the Marvel Comics superhero garbage of Hollywood, because are focusing on fake heroes.
Yeah.
We've got real heroes.
Yeah.
You know, David is real.
Yeah.
And you know, so, David Livingston is real. But why must we worship
Spider-Man.
Captain America and junk like, sorry?
Spider-Man.
You know, nobody likes spiders. But you know, one here and there is one thing, but they saturate the culture and just too much. So in other words, if you get people so wrapped up in fake, then they miss reality. In fact, many people don't even know what to do with reality. And when you've got the average young man today, or male, is more into his video games and his alternate reality and his fake heroes, he's missing a real world that he should be taking dominion over. I mean, there's giants to kill, and there's mountains to climb, and there's battles to win, and all that. And why are we allowing the world to distract us? You just keep busy with your video game while we destroy society behind you. You know, that sort of thing. There's a real world we need to be taking dominion over. So, anyway, that's what the Reformation side is all about.